Log Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
Welcome, everybody, to Leaving in the Ring, Boxing Scene's official real show, where if it's not boxing, we don't care. It's a Sunday afternoon, beautiful over here in California. I don't know exactly where everybody else is at. If you're in the East Coast, if you're in, if you're in California, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. This is your host, Dave Duenas. It's the Prospect Watch. A highly demand segment that we started up a while back. A lot of fans love this segment that we do, where we bring on some of the top prospects in the boxing world, in the supposed dying sport, boxing. love that. Suppose. We're supposedly dying, but yeah, we got fighters that are keeping this sport so alive, man, that it's kind of hard to say that we're getting put in the ground. You got guys like Antonio Arzuco and Alex Perez, Jesse Vargas, Chris Avilos, Charlie Huertas, Dontell Wilder, Randy Caballero, Angel Estrada, Dennis Duglin, and the list keeps going on and on and on, from kids from Jose Benavides and Frankie Gomez. You know,
Donnell Livingston,
you know, and you got Brandon Gonzalez, who just recently had a separation from Ray Wood, the father of the stepfather of the late great Diego Corrales, had some problems in the camp, so they decided to go their separate ways. So right now, Brandon Gonzalez is on a setback, who is signed to Let's Get It On Promotions, and he's looking for a trainer. So if there is a trainer out there looking to get a hot middleweight prospect, Brandon Gonzalez will be your man. How you doing, Gabriel?
I'm doing good, man. You know, it's a little cloudy out there. It's probably because soccer's still playing. I think as soon as it's over, the cloud should part and it'll be a beautiful day.
Yeah. The Netherlands, I believe, are playing
against Spain. That's my homeland, but I could care less. I really could, you know.
Well, there you go, man. Well, then less than 6 minutes, Juanma López dispatches Bernabé Concepcion last night in Puerto Rico. Before disposing Bernabé, he was put on the canvas at the ending seconds of round one. He put, to the fans, including myself, who everybody knows I'm a big fan of Juanma, being put in the ending seconds of round one by Bernabé, getting caught because López decided to open up. And that sometimes seems to be his calling when he thinks he's got his prey hurt. He thinks he's got his victim ready to go. He likes to stand and trade and leaves himself vulnerable to getting countered shot. But after the hiccup of him being dropped in the first round, he came out in the second round, looked fantastic, was able to drop Bernabé on what a perfect down-the-pipe straight left. Then he did it again with a short right hook, and then came back chasing Bernabé across the ring to catch him with another straight left, and it was halted at the 237 mark by referee Luis Balbon. And it was a good 2 minute. Gabriel, you called it. You said that it wasn't going to be a whole lot. I thought, Bernabé was going to be able to come in and do a little something-something, but obviously that something-something came into nothing-nothing.
I didn't think it would be a blowout like that. I thought it would be more of a shutout. I was surprised that Bernabé just couldn't handle López's power. But, it kind of looked almost like when he took on Ponce de Leon. It's just right from the outset that question got answered, and Bernabé had the wrong answer, which is basically he couldn't handle the power, I thought López looked really explosive, but it's interesting that people, they make the Tito comparison, probably because he's more boxer-puncher or puncher-boxer than Cotto was, who was kind of more like a Swiss Army fighter, a little more of a pressure fighter, that kind of low to the ground. But, López is a little more straight up and down like Tito, but he's also got something else that, like Tito, in that he can be dropped, and when he gets dropped, he gets up and he's even more dangerous, and so the comparisons kind of continue. I thought it was an exciting fight. López is never really in a boring fight. And once again, last night, he proved why he's one of the top guys. But at the same time, Maybe that was like the best commercial for the Rafael Marquez fight, which I think is a fight that I'm not. It's like at once I'm excited because it's going to be, you know, an exciting fight, but at the same time I'd rather see him fight Celestino Caballero or somebody that's, you know, more of a contemporary. But that's a good commercial for that because now you can say, well, if Rafael Marquez lands, anything can happen, and you know last night he showed that.
You know, you're right. It was a great commercial for the leading to lead into the fight with Rafael Marquez. You know what that fight? I don't know. I mean, is Marquez going to be more competitive? Some are going to say yes. Some are going to say no. Some are going to say his days are gone and past. You know, Wama, though, leaves himself open to be countered. And there's one thing about Rafael Marquez. He does pack some cement in those gloves. So he should be able, if Wama makes that mistake and stand there a little too long and open up and trade with Marquez, the veteran fighter out of Mexico City, could be a possible upset. But it's very, very, very slim to seeing that happen. But it still leaves it very intriguing. Wama looks great, you know, goes in there. Very exciting. Very fan-friendly, and he's beloved by his country. That's one thing about the Puerto Rican fans. They come out and they support Wama when he comes out, and he does his job. He doesn't leave any questions out there. You know, he makes sure he answers everything when he steps in the ring, but there is that question still out there that he needs to answer is whether or not he's going to be able to keep coming up or be able to keep taking these hellacious shots that he's been receiving for the past three last fights that he's been in the ring. On the undercard, Nonito Dornier out of San Leandro, California, Bay Area boy. He scored a successful win over 20-year-old Ramon Tyson Marquez. It was on this, the sixth round. They stopped it on TKO, and the advice by the corner, the Tyson corner, decided to step in and just kind of halted it. You know, Nonito, man, just really outclassed the kid. Now it's time for him to step up and get the bigger and better fights out there. You know, I know Showtime would like to see Victor Artinian step into the ring with Nonito, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like more or less he's going to get the Mexican fighter, you know, Fernando Montiel. I think that's a much better fight. It's an anticipated bout, and it's definitely going to keep that Mexico versus Philippine rivalry, you know, alive.
Well, I think that's a great fight, you know. It's time for Nonito. You know, Steve Kim reported on his Twitter last night the real reason, you know, Nonito came out and he fought at Southpaw was that he had an injured hip, and so it felt better to be on that side. And he did fight. He fought a little out of character. I didn't think the southpaw worked very well at all. I tweeted back to Steve, he's going to have a lot more than a bad hip if he keeps fighting southpaw. Just because he kept leaning over that left hand whenever he'd throw it. He fought small, which I thought was really interesting.
Right.
But he was a completely different fighter when he was fighting out of the left-handed stance. And I can understand that happening. But it just was – it was a strange experiment And it kind of speaks to the level of opposition in that you can come out and for four rounds try an experiment and have it basically not backfire on him. It almost did. He came out and ate a right hand right off the bat. You know, but then when he switched to right-handed, man, it was a whole different fighter and a whole different fight. And the fight was over pretty soon after that. I think him versus Montiel is going to be a great fight. I think he's a taller guy. He's the quicker guy. But Montiel's got that experience. He's got that power. And tenacity, man. You know, he's the kind of guy that if you make a mistake, you know, if you leave yourself open for a right hook like that, he's going to get you out of there. You know, and Hizumi Hasegawa learned that. He was outboxing Montiel for most of that fight, and he blinked, and it was over, you know.
You know, going back with Dornier, going to that southpaw stance, man, you're absolutely right. That's something that, you know, when you're already down that line, I mean, okay, I could see with Marquez, he was like, I'm willing to try this out. I want to see, you know, working on this in the sparring, in the gym, if it's going to benefit me. You know, sure, give it a shot, but you're still with, you know, with Marquez Tyson, he still has some pop. You know, you're playing with fire there a little bit. But trying to do it with Fernando Montiel, don't do it. You know what I mean? Stick to a game plan that's been working. You know, why fix something that has not been broken? Stick to what, you know, you have naturally been trained to do. Get in there and do your job. Don't flirt with something that you're going to later regret down the line. And especially with a guy like Montiel, like you just said right now, he's got ring experience. He's been there. He's been doing it. He's at a high note right now in his career since facing Hasegawa in Japan. Guess what? Don't play with a guy right now whose confidence build is up in the air.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of fighters that switch, you know, but very few that are successful. You know, Andre Durell is good at it. He gets a little wild when he switches, particularly as he's switching. He kind of squares up. The guy that's really great at it is Andre Ward. You know, you don't even really notice that he's just switched. You know, he'll throw, you know, a rear punch, and then when he brings that punch back to his face, all of a sudden he's leading with that right hand, and now he's in the southpaw position. You didn't even notice it. And he's a guy that he doesn't really change his style when he's going, other than the stance when he goes southpaw. He's still able to move and be very smart and not get hit that much. I almost think sometimes that Ward's better as a southpaw than he is as a right-handed fighter. But in Donaire's case, it really did change him. And granted, I am not a good fighter. I'm not even a pro fighter or an amateur fighter. But I'm a fight enthusiast in the gym. I enjoy switching up. And when I was the first pro trainer I trained with, Don Connolly up in Sacramento, I came in and I'm a southpaw, and he would not train me that way. He made me fight orthodox. And so I fight Don Connolly style when I fight orthodox, very very pressure, very traditional boxing. You know, kind of coming forward and real tight guard. When I go southpaw, I'm much more creative. I'm able to move around the ring a lot more, and I'm more of a speed type fighter. And it was interesting watching Donaire and kind of going. When he's fighting southpaw, he's much more of a pressure guy. He's kind of compact, low to the ground, short, gave up his height. But then when he went the other way to orthodox, he was all of a sudden moving around the ring, lowering his hands, able to do all the things that make Nonito Donaire the Flash. I thought it was very interesting to watch, but you're right. You know, you want to add tools, but not against Montiel.
Well, you know, what it is this, man, is that when you're trained a certain way, you know, he's orthodox, you have more bounce. That means you're more comfortable and doing the performance that you're normally doing in the gym. When you switch up the style, going to southpaw, the reason why he's more at a flat pace, you know, flat stance, you know, he's grounded more to the canvas, and he's more of a pressure fighter, is because his body's no longer familiar to that balance. So it's kind of like walking on that tight rope. You know, you're taking your time because you don't know whether you're going to lean to the right too much or to the left. And that's what kind of basically happened with Nonito Donaire. You know, you don't do something that you haven't trained or you just haven't done for some time. There's only, you know, I would say a handful of fighters, if that. That can probably do the switch and hit type of style, but it's not recommended. Even for world-class fighters, it's not recommended. You know, Friday night, you had Hank Lundy. He lost his undefeated record to John Molina. And I tell you what, you know, for a moment, you know, Hank Lundy was hammering John Molina for all the rounds until the eighth round. Then it was turned around, and it looked like John Molina was going to do exactly what I thought. He was going to nail him to the canvas, and that's exactly what happened on the 11th round. It was a TKO, you know, but, you know, John's got to work on that jab, man. He's really got to go back into the gym and really look at this fight, him and his crew, the Goosen Tudor and Joe Goosen. They just got to go back and look at the things that were really the obvious there, and that was, you know, was a taller, bigger guy, but he just tends to walk in without throwing any punches.
Yeah, the main problem he's got right now is, you know, there's some head movement, but a lot of it is he doesn't use the jab, you know, and he does sometimes, but he leaves it out there, and John needs to get it snappier. He needs to he needs to use it in multiples, you know, not just throw one as a range finder, but, you know, throw three, and then you're inside, and you haven't taken any punishment yet, and then you can bring that right hand. You know, John's still, I think, a young fighter. He's the kind of guy, he's almost Margarito-esque to me. That's kind of what the performance said to me, and that he's a big guy for the weight class. He's 5'10 and a half at 135 pounds. So he's huge. And you can see the difference in him and Lundy, who's not the tallest guy in the world, but more of a lightweight than Molina is in terms of his height and his build. But able to absorb punishment from these smaller guys, come forward, keep throwing his punches, and eventually he's gonna get you there. And this game is mental as much as anything. And if people were listening to the show on Thursday, I picked Lundy to win, and I picked him on the next round of that, you know, last Tuesday. And, you know, during the show, John Molina Sr. called me and just said, you know, basically what I was thinking, you know, when I did a piece on Molina last week, and I was asking him, because Lundy was talking a lot, saying he was going to do this to John, that to John, John's a dumb fighter, this and that. And John is normally a very joking guy, kind of guy that likes to talk, not about his opponents, but just talk in general. And he was being very quiet during all this and letting Lundy talk. And when they got to the weigh-in, Lundy was talking, and then they faced off. And Lundy got to see for himself how much bigger John was. Then they shook hands, and John squeezed his hand. And Lundy shut up and realized who the bigger guy is and what he was in for. And that at that moment, I changed my pick. To me, the fight was over. You know, and
right.
that John had won the mental aspect of the game, and you could see it in the fight. You know, Lundy, once, you know, we got to the midway point, he started to fall apart, started to showboat a little bit, trying to do the behind-the-back punch and all that stuff. And John just stayed the course. He stayed with his game plan, and he won out. And I don't care what anybody says. That was not a quick stoppage. You know, Lundy's body sagged. His arms began to drop. He was on the ropes, eating punches. What more do you need? He's a young prospect. He doesn't need to be knocked cold.
Right.
You know, he should be able to fight another day.
And exactly. That's exactly what I thought too. You know, and but you know, John Molina, you got to give it to him. He keep pressing forward. He did his job. You know, I believe we got our first guest.
We need to have a
hello.
A TL come up there and check it out.
Hello. Hello, do I got Antonio with me on the line right now?
Oh, okay.
Hello, do I got Antonio? Azuko. Antonio Azuko, are you on the line with us right now? I'm leaving in the ring, brother.
Yeah, but I don't even need that piece.
I don't think so. I don't know who that is, to tell you the truth, Gabriel. Gabe, you there, brother? Or did I lose you?
Yeah, I muted me just for a second. So I could...
Let me try again, man. Let me see. I think this might be them, you know. Area code 818. Do I got Antonio Azuko on the line with me right now? Antonio, Antonio, are you there?
Yeah, this is Antonio.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good, man. You know what? I thought you were in another number. They didn't send me the area code that you were going to be calling in. So I got a bunch of numbers just popping up right here, brother, so I apologize. You know, 140, simple man, Antonio Arzuco, 7-0 with 5 KOs, 22 years old out of San Diego. You know, got a great extensive amateur career, junior Olympics, national champion, ringside championships. You have wins over Javier Molina and even Jesse Vargas in the amateurs. You know, signing with Espinoza Boxing, brother, how is things going for yourself right now?
You know, a lot of excitement and all my surroundings. This is the opportunity we were looking for, you know, and we're just real thankful it came at this time.
You know, when it came around where Espinoza Boxing, who's got a lot of guys underneath their banner, from Israel Vasquez to Ademaris to Luis Ramos, Carlos Molina, Ronnie Ruiz, and even Abraham Lopez, how did that make you feel, you know, to be among the other rest of these other guys that obviously have been doing a great job in building their fighters?
Well, you know, you said it yourself, you know, Frank has been doing a great job building these fighters. And it's a real big privilege to be part of the prospects that are coming up. And, you know, just to be part of the Espinoza Boxing Club, you know, it just means a lot. It's a big accomplishment.
Antonio, you know, that 140 division, it just seems to get richer and richer and heavier. You know, you got a lot of guys in that division, from Jose Benavides all the way from Frankie Gomez, and the list keeps going on and on. You know, Let me ask you this. When you hear these other names, does it make it tough for yourself, or does it give you more of a motivational build of saying, you know what, I'm happy I'm among these other fighters so that I can get my shot of becoming a mega, mega star?
You know, you're right. It's a lot of tough guys out there, but the tougher they are, the harder you're going to work yourself, you know. You got to get your name out there. You got to represent. You got to get those shots that you want. So I'd say it's a good weight class, you know.
Antonio, this is Gabe Montoya, Max Boxing, and Leave It in the Ring. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. How are you? How about you?
I'm doing good, man. You know, it's Sunday. I'm a little hungover, but I'm all right. I'm curious. Where's the nickname Simple Man come from?
Just you know, it happened during a sparring session with Aaron Garcia from Vista, California. Went out there, and I had a shirt on that said Simple Man. And my coach, from that moment on, he goes, like, you know what? That's your name. You know, you're a real mellow type of guy. You know, you're real calm. You know, so it's going to stick to you, and it has.
Can you describe, you know, the process of going from the amateurs, you're a standout amateur, and now you're 7-0, 5 KOs as a pro. What have been some of the challenges in transferring all your knowledge from the amateurs and then kind of going to more of a pro style?
Well, from the beginning, I was always told, you know, you have more of a professional style. And I've always been a push-forward type of fighter. But now the transition would be, you know, now you're allowed to take time. You know, you don't waste punches as you would do in the amateurs. It's not a scoring, computerized scoring anymore. You know, now your punches have to have an effect on the other guy. And being more intelligent up in the ring, you know, just making sure that your punch has that power behind it.
So this really hasn't been, in terms of style, it hasn't been a big change. It's just kind of getting used to not having the headgear on and maybe dealing with some opponents that have more experience.
Yeah, you know, that would be the thing right there. Going up there with fighters, you know, that have been doing it for more years than I have, they know they have more on their background than what I would do. Maybe every once in a while I do go back to amateur studying and start throwing lots of punches, combinations, and that's when I know that I have to slow down, compose myself.
Have you answered all the questions yet? I mean, you know, there's certain questions that start to happen, you know, when you turn pro, getting your chin checked. I know you haven't been down yet, or, you know, being in a losing situation. What kind of questions have you been asked, and what kind of questions do you look forward to answering?
You know, well, in my last fight, you know, I did commit a couple mistakes. I did leave my chin out there in the open, and I did get caught with some looping shots. I would say maybe I was staggered, you know, so probably I did pull my chin into play a little bit. you know, maybe, you know, having to be more of a technical fighter. You know, sometimes I do get that habit and just bull rush the opponent. And that's, you know, things that we work on.
Let me ask you this. What kind of pace are you hoping to be in right now as a prospect, you know? And obviously, the more rounds you get, the more experience are banked into the bank for yourself. What is the pace that Espinoza Boxing and Frank Sr. and Jr. have been talking to you about?
Right now, we just currently signed. You know, we're looking into doing another six-rounder probably within the next month or so. And, you know, I would leave that up all to Frank. I know he does a good job with the pace that he takes his fighters. I mean, you know, I'm 22. I'm at that mature age. I'm in no hurry. I don't see the need to be up there so quick. You know, sometimes it's a mistake that's made, taking your fighters up too quick. And, you know, it's not a really long-time career. So the most I can get out of it, it would be the best.
You know, I'm got to say, Gabriel, I'm impressed because that's, you know, Antonio, you're absolutely right. That has been a mistake of a lot of prospects. They've been rushed a little too quick. They want to make that big money. And I think that's why I like the Espinoza Boxing crew, is because they have a very strong understanding in how to build their fighters. I mean, look at Adner Morris. You know, at one time he was being criticized of the way he was being moved, but now he's being praised about the way he's been moved because he's in the mouths and in the minds of boxing fans, you know. I got to say, Antonio, I wish you all the luck, and hopefully the Simple Man nickname doesn't stay very simple when you get in that ring every time, you know?
Oh, it doesn't, you know. I'm the Simple Man off the ring, in the ring, you know, I'm a whole different person. It's just the persona I get off of the ring, you know. I mean, how many boxers can say that they actually like to read Steinbeck books, you know, read novels on their time off? You know, that's me. You know, that's me. So, you know, it's just another way of keeping my mind occupied, you know, not getting too stressed out over fights. And, you know, so it's I think it'll be great, you know, working with Frank and his son, you know, it's kind of, you could say it's a dream come true.
Hey, brother. Well, like I said, you know, I wish you all the luck in the world, you know, and we'll definitely keep a close eye on what's going on in your career, and hopefully have you on back again on Leave It in the Ring.
All right. Thanks, man. Thank you for having me on.
There you go. All right, brother. You take it easy. Have a good Sunday.
All right. You too. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Antonio Simple Man out of Azuco. I just went, you know, brain dead right now. I got to say, Gable, sounds like a really smart kid. Definitely he's got the skills right now to keep him in this pro ranking, you know. I know that he's only got 7 wins and 5 KOs, you know, starting off, you know, at a good pace. But being in the Junior Olympics, National Championships, Ringside Championships, and et cetera, he's obviously has taken the path of educating himself before stepping into the pro rankings. And that's always something very much recommended. When you go into the pro rankings, you know, it's not recommended starting late in your career, and it's not recommended jumping in to the pro rankings when you just got maybe 4 or 5 or even 6 fights. But there has been some exceptions, you know. A little later, we're going to have one of those exceptions in the heavyweight 6'7", Wilder, who was in the Olympics, and really honestly made a lot of people turn heads and it going like, whoa, where did this kid come from? You there, Gable? You got your phone on mute again, Vato. Anyways, man.
Yeah, you know, he came late to the sport. I was wondering why he wasn't answering my question about Steinbeck. Deontay Wilder is an interesting guy. He kind of came late. He's still kind of developing. Early on, you know, I used to say, you know, is Deontay, could he be Wilder? Because you just go out there and go crazy, you know, and throw wild punches. And it seems like now he might be settling down a little bit. And, you know, people that are saying, like, the heavyweight division in America is dead. Well, you know, this guy, if he's developed right, he could be the real deal. You know, I think he's still kind of a long-term project in a sense. He's almost like you know, when you get a high school basketball player and bring him to the pros, you know. It's not quite that polished. But look how far he got, you know, being really young in the sport. And the guy ends up with a gold medal, ends up being, you know, a top fighter, you know, and a top blue chip prospect. Now the question is, you know, how do you develop him, you know, and you know, do they take their time and rather than try to rush him and make him the next great thing? You know, I hope they take their time.
Absolutely. You know, a little later we should be having, well, who's going to be up next is going to be the Puerto Rican kid, you know, from New Jersey. They call him the Brick City Bullet, Alex Perez, southpaw, 28 years old. I heard he's pretty tall in height. He's got 11 wins, 7 KOs. His last fight was with Rosario, and he TKO'd him in the second round. He's scheduled to fight again against Edwin Dos Santos Barros on July 16th on Friday Night Fights this coming up week. You know, the Puerto Rican kid, it's got a very interesting story. He's been shot. He's been stabbed several times growing up in the hard parts of New Jersey. But he's also served as the leading sparring partner of the likes of Miguel Cotto, to Sergio Martinez, to Felix Stern, and Joel Julio. You know, so this kid is a pretty good prospect, you know, even though he's got some short record. He's definitely somebody to keep a big eye on. He should be on in a few more minutes. And I tell you what, his Friday night fight, I don't know if it's his debut. I think it is. He's got a tough customer there that's going to be put in front of him, you know, and we'll talk to him a little bit about that fight when he comes on with us, you know. In other news, man, Mike Jones was on Showtime. He dominated against Irving Garcia. It was stopped in the 5th round, and it was a controversial knockout because it was considered a low blow. You know, Mike Jones immediately after, it was calling out Andre Berto. So very interesting whether or not if it was, I don't know. How did you feel about that, man?
Oh, it was a low blow. It was definitely a low blow. Yeah, that's Randy Newman for you. He, you know, they usually bring him in for like taller fighters, and, you know, Jones is kind of a bigger guy. If people forget, he was the guy, he refereed Arthur Abraham versus Edison Miranda 1. He's the guy that took 5 points away from Miranda without stopping the fight, which usually, you know, after 3 points, you know, it's a DQ. Instead, he kind of kept the fight going. It was a very controversial fight. You know, it was just not, in my opinion, not a very good job of refereeing. And here, looking at the replay, it seemed like he kind of was in position to see the low blow, and yet he didn't. I think he really missed the call. But at the same time, you know, Jones was heading there anyways. Irvin Garcia was going to get knocked out. He was well on his way. And you could tell by the demeanor that when the fight ended, he didn't really question it too much. He almost had a look of like, oof, I'm glad that was over. You know, because Jones, it was like he woke up in the fight. You know, the first couple rounds, he seemed to be lackadaisical, similar to his last fight, not really getting a lot done, kind of confused as to how to deal with this guy who, you know, Jones has been a prospect for a while. I think this is one of the first opponents he's had that's given him some resistance. And for a minute there, it was like Jones didn't know what to do with him. And then he woke up and all of a sudden just started letting his hands go, started doing what Jones can do, you know, throwing the jab, throwing combinations, really letting his power go. And Garcia just got overwhelmed and beat down. And it was almost like watching Mike Jones kind of grow up from prospect to true contender. You know, I was very impressed by what I saw. For a second there, I wasn't, you know. For a second there, I was like, oh, man, Jones just at the top level is not going to do it. And then he learned how to take it. It was pretty awesome.
You know, like I said, we got it's the Prospect Watch, and I believe we got our next prospect on the line right now. You know, Brick City Bullet, Alex Perez, you on the line with us right now, brother?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing? How's are you up in New Jersey, or are you somewhere else right now at the moment?
I'm in New Jersey. New Jersey.
How's the weather over there right now, brother?
Hot, 95 to 100.
Ooh, yeah, that is hot, man. So so we're breaking down your record a little bit here, and, you know, grew up in the tough part of New Jersey. You know, been shot, been stabbed, brother. So how do you go from there? I mean, what made the turning point for yourself, you know, to decide to say, you know what, I'm going to become a pro fighter, and even though I've been through some obstacles, I'm not going to let that weigh me down and not become something?
You know, I was I started boxing when I was 8, but you know, I got caught up in the streets. So, you know, basically when I got those wake up calls, you know what I'm saying, it just was time for me to wake up and do what I do best, be here for my family and take care of my family. So it was just go right back to the ring and do it 100% instead of half stepping, because you know, I don't care who you are. In this game, in this boxing game, either you in or you out. It's no 1 feet in and 1 feet out in this sport, not in this sport anyway. So I went in, went full speed ahead. It's been a long, bumpy road, but you know I'm here now. So God willing, 16th, everything's gonna go into place.
Now, is the schedule with Vincent Arroyo, is that still on the go? Because on Boxing Rec, it looked like they were trying to put you in with somebody else.
Actually, Vincent Arroyo pulled out, got pulled out, and they've been looking for another opponent for me.
Now,
Alex, does that kind of
piss you off a little bit? Because that fight right there with Vincent seemed like it would have been your coming out party, because Vincent upset it, Jeremy Bryan, and, you know, it looked like it would be a gamble for the both of you guys, and does it kind of upset you because that would have been the telling of what you're all about?
Does it set me to be God on the truth? It sets me a lot. I mean, I was looking forward to that fight. That right there was basically what you just said. You couldn't say no better. It's my coming out party. Oh, man, I mean, I had the perfect couple of sparring partners for this guy. I'm upset. I'm very upset. But, you know, it's just on to the next one. I got to focus on whoever they put in front of me this last season. Because no matter what, I'm going to do what I got to do with God's word. But, yeah, that was definitely a great look for me. But, you know, I guess, you know, God got his plans. And it wasn't in that boy time to get punished, because I was going to punish that boy.
You know, 28 years old. It looks like you've got some great work in, you know, in getting in there with Miguel Cotto to Sergio Martinez, Felix Stern, and Joel Julio. But there's also some history of nobody wants to get in the ring with you. You're having a tough time getting fights. You know, and that already being said, you know, the names I just threw out, which is always great for prospects to get underneath their belt, because you're getting the workmanship that you need with experienced fighters. But do you feel sometimes it kind of backfired on you? Because when managers and other trainers find out, whoa, this guy's been in with world-class guys, this may be not the guy or the ticket to build my fighter. Shy away from him.
Yeah, definitely. That just like you said, it was a plus, and then it was just a minus on it. But you know, like you know, all I can do is just keep the faith. You know? I'm not letting go. This is my number one sport. This is what I love. This is my life. You know what I'm saying? This basically got me out of living. Like I'm living through this. Like you know what I'm saying? Boxing saved my life. Point blank. Period. You know what I'm saying? So I'm here, not just for me, most importantly, my family. So I'm just going to keep the faith and keep on pushing and keep on pushing. And one day, and God willing, it's real soon, my time is going to come.
Alex, this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing? I'm curious. You know, you're 28 years old. You're a stylistic problem. You're being a southpaw. Boxer,
mm-hmm.
Do you feel you basically have a prospect record at this point, 11-0. Do you feel a sense of urgency that it's now or never? You got to step on the gas and really start making moves.
Urgency? No, not urgency, because you know you got all these top guys. He did 35 plus, so no, not an urgency. But my time, I've been waiting for a nice minute, so that's why I'm just so anxious. But as urgency as in my age or nothing, nah, not at all.
Because you had that break from 2007 to 2009, so in a sense you feel like you don't have a lot of miles on you. You still feel very fresh.
No, I feel very fresh. I mean, you know exactly, because I haven't been getting in there warming and all that. But I'm very fresh. On top of that, I've been in the gym consistently, just patiently waiting, fight, fall here, fight, fall there, fight, fall here. But, you know, I just never, my will never broke. I just never gave up. I'm still here and still patiently waiting.
Who do you see realistically, Mike Jones just had a big win. That guy Tyner just had a big welterweight win. What kind of level of opponent would you like to get in? I mean, obviously, we'd all like to get in with the champ, but is there anybody specifically at the level right below that you'd be interested in taking on, that you just have an eye on and say, you know what, I could beat that guy?
I have an eye on a couple of top contenders, but, you know, right now I'm just focused on July 16th. I'm not going to overlook nobody. I mean, you know, I don't care if you get in there with me with a record that's 0-70. I mean, I don't look past nobody because this is boxing. You know what I'm saying? And nothing's never promised as far as you getting a win.
Yeah.
Alex, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us on Leaving the Ring, brother. And I hope whatever opponent you get put in front of you on July 16 on Friday Night Fights ESPN, you're able to show the skill level that you bring to the table. Because you had short work last time when you stepped in with Rosario, TKO'd him in the second round. So we will continue supporting you and keeping a close eye on your career, brother. And hope to have you on again before, after your ESPN fight.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. And thank you guys for just giving me your time and opportunity to speak to you guys about everything. I appreciate that very much.
All right, brother. Hey, you take it easy, man, and enjoy the hot weather over there in New Jersey.
All right, man. God bless y'all.
Take
it easy, man.
Well, there you go. Another prospect, man. Southpaw, 28 years old. The Brick City Bullet out of New Jersey.
A great nickname.
Yeah, I love that nickname, you know, the Brick City Bullet, you know. I'm talking about taking it back to nicknames when nicknames meant a whole lot. You know, it was the header of a fight. He didn't need to make up no movie-like header for the fight to sell it, because the nickname itself sold the fight, you know.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to face somebody named the Brick City Bullet. Yeah. You know? I just kind of wonder, like, why do they call him that? That's kind of scary. Yeah,
you know, it's like almost going into a ring with somebody that's called F you up.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to mess with that guy, F you up cat. You know, he just
Gabriel steal your lunch money, Montoya. You know?
Yeah, that's see.
That'd be kind of nice. I like it.
Gabriel steal your lunch money. Oh,
or like be like Blocko. I think that would be
I got to say this. If I was only 5'1 or 5'3 and 14 years old in junior high, then you got a point there. I wouldn't want to step into the ring with you, you know.
Unfortunately, I think I was about 3'2", you know, about 60 pounds in as a freshman in high school. So.
Mine would be Dave Overweight Duenas. That's not intimidating. There's no intimidation there, you know.
Like guys smoking on the street corner. This is not that scary.
Oh man, you know, I gotta say, you know, I always enjoy having the prospects on because it is very important if you're a fight fan, a boxing fan, and you care about boxing. And like our slogan that was started by Strikeheart, you know, if it's not boxing, we don't care. You gotta tune in. You gotta support these fighters. You gotta go over there and check them out. And you know, Alex Perez, a southpaw, 28 years old. Like I said, putting in the work when he's getting in with sparring partners like the likes of Miguel Cotto, Sergio Martinez, Felix Stern. Felix Stern is a guy that gave Oscar De La Hoya fits, and a lot of people believe, including myself, he beat Oscar when he stepped in. You know, when Oscar was using him as a tune-up fight to get in with Bernard Hopkins when he tried to get his other bout, the middleweight bout, against the undisputed reigning middleweight champion of the world at the time, B-Hop. And just to say that he's getting put in there, you know, it sucks because when prospects do this, which is very needed, and it's something that needs to be done because you learn your craft. You're able to pick the brain of these guys that have been in there, that are putting in the work, that have that experience way over you at the moment, and they're at the pinnacle of their career. It sucks because when you're put in with guys like that and other trainers and other fighters and other promotional groups are hearing those gym stories, those inside the glove stories, it could really honestly put some type of, you know, shield over you where everybody's bouncing off of you going like, hey, you know what? There's an aura around this kid that I just don't like, you know, and it spells defeat for my fighter if we put them in with him. And that could be really bad for Alex Perez. It could either crush him as a fighter in terms of building him up, meaning that he gets discouraged and decides not to continue, or lacks in the gym because he's like, well, what's the point of training?
Yeah, it's hard, you know. Paulie Malignaggi, for a while there, I had heard from guys that knew him, had lost his love for the sport a little bit because he couldn't get the big fights, couldn't have that breakthrough win. And yet, you know, as we've seen over the years, he had all the talent in the world. You know, he didn't have a lot of power, but he's an exciting guy who would stand in there and trade and had a lot of heart and guts, you know, good amateur career. He had all the makings of a guy that should, you know, get someplace. And for a long time, he wasn't getting there. And then he was having all the hand problems as well. But he showed, you know, through perseverance, you know, maybe he's not going to beat all the top guys in the world, but he's certainly able to get in there and compete. And, you know, you got a guy like this who is a matchup problem. He's got a style that people don't like facing. It can be tough. But, you know, this game, like I said earlier, is mental as much as anything. It's not just having the physical tools, but the mental fortitude to forge through not just what goes on in the ring, but everything that goes on outside of it. You know, I wish him luck.
Yeah, wish him all the luck. You know, who we got coming up next is another very top prospect, a kid that obviously a lot of the fight world already know because of his, his trainer, his famous trainer, a guy that considers himself one of the greatest trainers out there right now because he has one of the pound-for-pound fighters under his tutelage, which is pretty boy Floyd Mayweather. We got Roger Mayweather training this Mexican kid, Jesse Vargas, so he should be on at 145, and we'll have a chance to speak to him a little bit about what's happening and what's in the future in store for him. You know, at 21 years old, a light welterweight at 5'11", very tall, you know, with 11-0 with 6 KOs. You know, last fight was with Ernesto Zazula. You know, it was at the Club Nokia in downtown L.A. He scored a 6-round KO. And his best performance has been against former titleist Arturo Mora, you know, where he stopped Mora in the 6th round. And that was under the Mayweather and Mosley undercard. And I got to say, you know, he's a tough, tough, tall kid. He's been around. You know, his first amateur bout was with Roger Mayweather. He hasn't gone anywhere. You know, Roger has took him to the Junior Golden Gloves, to the National Gloves in 2002 and 2005. Plus the PAL tournament. He's made the Mexican Olympic team before high school. So this is a very well-schooled fighter, but does not resemble, in my opinion, anything of Pretty Boy Floyd. Completely different. doesn't use the shoulder roll. The guy that goes in, you know, and uses pressure and uses his size.
Well, he's an interesting guy. You know, a lot of times the criticism with the Mayweathers is like, you know, well, where's your other champion? You know, if Floyd wasn't such a good fighter or wasn't such a great athlete, you know, he's a special fighter, you guys wouldn't have a champion. Well, I'll point to Jesse Vargas and say this guy's probably going to be their next champion. He's completely different than Floyd. You're right. You know, I think he does tend to use his intelligence in there a little bit, you know, a little less than he should, but he's growing up. He's a prospect. But, you know, man, the inside game, you can tell. He hasn't worked with Floyd. I asked him about it. But you can tell that he's watched and he's learned. And his inside game is ferocious, man. This kid can go to the body, which is something that is always hard to teach.
You know,
he seems to like it, you know.
If there's one thing about this kid, Jesse Vargas, and I've been watching him, you know, and being able to go back, the beauty of having the internet is we got YouTube and everything else, is you could really, you know, Mexicanos love their fighters to go forward. Mexicanos love their fighters to kind of leave their heart in that ring. And Jesse Vargas brings that to the table, you know, and it's ironic that his trainer was nicknamed the Mexican Assassin. And he's got a Mexicano at 5'10" going in and assassinating whoever's being put in front of him. I believe we got Jesse Vargas on the line right now with us. Vargas, are you on with us, brother?
Yeah, that's right. How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic, brother. 21 years old, light welterweight, big man for 5'10". Let me ask you first off, is, you know, Roger is one of those very colorful people, very outspoken. When you guys are in training camp, is he a different person when the cameras are not on, when he's training you?
Yeah, he's quiet and strict, you know, and yeah, that's it. That's all I can say about him. Once we're in the gym, quiet, strict, make sure we're doing everything right. And outside the ring, he's a nice man. He's a real nice person. You know, when the TVs come on, you know, they talk a little bit. You know, when he used to fight, he was just like Floyd, you know, but he's the nicest guy once he's off camera.
You know, Jesse, your last performance was obviously the best performance. It caught a lot of people's attention when you got in with Arturo Mora, who was a challenger for a title at one time, and you dismantled him in 6 rounds. But the one thing that I saw, and I was wondering if you ever took notice, or maybe Roger took notice and got on you a little bit, was you were stopping yourself in your tracks, and you would earmuff and allow Mora to tee off, even though they were arm punches, but to tee off. I didn't see you want to slip them or move them. I saw you want to walk them down. Is that something that is a concern in your training camp or hasn't even been brought up?
No, yes, it was brought up right after the fight, even before we would make that mistake. And it was just, I think it's just a lazy move of me.
Mm-hmm.
But right after the fight, we spoke about it, and we didn't really like it. Neither did I or my trainers. So we got back to the gym, started moving ahead a little more, started moving, walking the ring a little more, and in this my last fight, we did exactly what we were working on. We moved my head a little more, walked around a little more, but every once in a while, I would still stay like you say, just with my defense, which I mean is gonna. We'll change it up as every fight comes. You know, that's what these fights are for, just to learn off of every fight, and that's what we're doing. There's more mistakes to come, also. You know, but the good thing is I always like to be aware, so I could make the change as fast as I can.
Bill, obviously, you know, Jesse, the Mexicano fans love that. I mean, I loved it. I'm Chicano, Mexican American, so I love to see my fighters go in there and just lay it all on the line. You know, is that one thing? Is that maybe the reason why you're like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna take some shots, but I'm gonna show my gente that, you know, I'm one of these Mexicanos that are coming here to give you guys a performance. And it may not be the smartest thing in the world to do, but now machismo kicks in, and I kind of forget I should slip the head.
That's a perfect way to say it, man. That's exactly what it is. You know, you want to just go in there, and I don't care to get hit. You know what I mean? You hear the crowd screaming, and you want to fight. You want to give them a fight. But, you know, we're trying to stay technical also. You know what I mean? Every once in a while, go in and give the crowd a fight. But, you know, we're working on not getting hit, moving around. Because the way I come in, used to come in was just, all right, if I get hit, it don't matter. But now we're starting to change it up, move my head, try not to get hit as much. You know, and we'll punch, hit a lot more than he hits me. Yeah. It's always going to kick in, like you said. That machismo is always going to kick in that you want to fight, you know what I mean? But we're going to try to stay away from that as much as we can.
I guess you could say it's that Indio in our blood, you know what I mean? That stubbornness.
Yeah, it's what it is. Like your blood just, you know, it heats up and you want to fight. But, you know, it's not always the best thing to do.
Jesse, this is Gabe Montoya with MaxBoxing.com and Leave It in the Ring. We met after your last fight with Ernie Zavala. Can you talk a little bit about that fight, what you learned in it, how tough it was? He seemed a little tougher than you guys had expected and stayed around a lot longer than I thought he would. But what did you learn out of that fight?
I learned I should have boxed a little more. I think as soon as I blocked a couple of punches, come back right away. Which sometimes he would, I would block some punches and I would stay there. Maybe a little more footwork, a little more head movement, you know. And Zavala, we expected that from him. My second in command coach, Boza Edwards, told me because he knew him from the past. This guy was tough and he was going to come to fight. And that's exactly what we expected. I mean, I would hit him and hit him when he would come in, and he just keep coming. He never backed down. But we learned a lot from that fight, and that's why we wanted him, because we knew he was going to come to fight, so we were going to have to learn and think of what we had to do with him. Like in the ring, as soon as that bell rang, I had to find out what punches were going to land, because it wasn't that easy to hit him. Usually my jab is real effective, but with him, I had to change it up. I had to start throwing more hooks, right hands, because the jab just wasn't going in. He had good defense.
I'd actually watched that guy quite a bit, you know, watched him at the wild card, and going in, I knew this was a nice, tough step up for you. Do you guys plan to step it up further? Do you know where you're going next, who your next opponent is going to be?
I don't know. I haven't talked to Mayweather Promotions about it. I know that they want to put me in with hopefully one of, you know, the ranked top 10 guys soon. I don't know how soon it'll be. In my opinion, I would love to fight, you know, the top rated guys, but it would be up to them.
Well, your phone sounds really crazy, man.
What's that?
Yeah. You sound like an alien, my friend.
I guess I need to get a new phone. Yeah, I need to talk to him.
Yeah, that's all right, man. I'm still using like a 1990 special. Don't even feel bad. I'm getting my iPhone.
Oh, yeah? We need to switch up to the iPhone.
I'm curious though. You know, you've been fighting kind of what I always call the prospect weight, which is they're listing you as a junior welter, but you're fighting like 141, 142. Do you think you're going to grow into more of a welterweight as you move into like contender status? Or do you plan on, you know, sucking on down and just getting down to 140 and campaigning there?
Yes, I think of staying at 140 for a while, because I mean I make the weight easy. The contract we sign it sometimes at 42 because of the opponent or for a certain reason. We make the weight easy. In the future, of course, we're gonna go up to welterweight and hopefully get a title in that weight class also. But right now we're good at 140, and we're here. We're probably gonna stay here for a while.
You know what?
Is my phone still messed up?
Hello.
Hello.
Jesse, are you still there, Jesse?
Sounds like an 80s video game.
Your phone. The phone's breaking up really bad, bro. We can barely understand what you're saying and stuff. You want to try to call in right back in, maybe hang up and call right back in so we can get everything you were saying?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, brother. Thank you.
And then now it sounds fine.
I know. What was that all about, man? And, you know, hopefully get him back on really quick so we can get those questions answered because, I couldn't understand anything. It was that bad. It was terrible.
If fans haven't had a chance to see him, then, you know, you guys got to make sure to check out the Golden Boy Promotions Fight Night Club. They're really bringing some really exciting fights, some really good action. it's a really fun atmosphere. Tattoo, one of the local radio hosts, is kind of the MC for the whole event. Oscar usually comes out. Bernard Hopkins usually comes out. And it's really a place for them to showcase a lot of their young talent, you know, get them some much-needed experience, not just in the ring, but on TV, in front of, you know, a big crowd. Usually, you know, the fighters will bring a large amount of their own fans to the show. And so they kind of get used to that environment of people cheering your name, trying to stay composed, trying to get done what you really need to get done in the ring. And it's always a good time, man. I highly recommend it. If you haven't seen it, you live in the L.A. area or near the L.A. area. It's one of the things that I would say is a big positive that Golden Boy Promotions has done in terms of bringing back kind of a high-level club show to the L.A. area. We don't really have a lot of those kind of high-level events, and this is definitely one of them. I mean, I've seen, you know, Charlie Huerta, Ricky Lopez, Derek Wilson, the Rioses, the Ramoses. It's an exciting night at the fights, always, you know. And Dave, that's where you and I met for the first time as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly, you know. That's right, that's right. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, I wandered in kind of almost late, as usual, and there you were.
That's right. And then you tried to take my milk money.
I did. I tried to punk you a little bit and said, come on the show.
Ooh, well, we're waiting for, you know, Jesse Vargas to call back in. And hopefully calls back in right now and get some better, you know, reception so we can understand what he was saying, because couldn't hear anything that he was answering, unfortunately.
It felt insightful, you know. It felt really, really good.
Yeah. After appearing Friday in front of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Antonio Margarito was denied his Nevada license. He was told to go back to California to be relicensed before they even considered giving him a renewal license in Nevada. So, in other words, he's got to go back to the scene of the crime. He's got to go back and face what has happened back there, you know, the music. He's got to go back and face that music. There's no way around it. You know, unfortunately, I got to say, I got to clap and pat the back of the Nevada State commissioners for holding, you know, sticking to their guns. Because Bob Arum does bring a lot of money to the casinos out there when he holds a fight. You know, we know how Bob got really upset about California and said, none of my fighters will come back and fight over here. Well, I don't know if he's going to be so vocal about saying that when it comes to Las Vegas.
Well, it's the thing that I was saying from the very beginning, you know, and we got into the press conference when Margarito became available to the press again, right before the Robert Garcia fight. And I said, wouldn't it be easier to just go to California? And, you know, Bob argued, we're not fighting in California. We're fighting in Mexico, you know, and it was really adamant about it. And then, you know, went further to say, we're never going to fight in California. We're going to fight in Florida, Texas, or Nevada. So why go to California? Well, but here's the thing. That's my Steve Kim doing Bob Arum impersonation. You know, but the thing of it is that ultimately the commissions agreed with me, both Texas and Nevada, and they both balked at giving him a license. And they didn't deny him a license. What they did was that they said, we're going to table the discussion. You need to go back to California. Our licensing isn't going to come down to whether or not they give you a license, but they think the right thing to do, no matter what legalese you want to speak, is to go to California, present your case to the people that took the license away, that revoked it, not suspended it, revoked it, and make your case and go from there. I think, you know, it may have hurt him, you know, fighting in Mexico, trying to get your license and, you know, talking about getting it in Texas and then going ahead and trying to get it in Nevada rather than go before the people that took away your license. I understand, you know, commission to commission, it's different and all the different kind of legal things that they can do. But ultimately, what it comes down to, it's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. And I believe we got our guest on again. Jesse, are you online with us, brother?
Yes, I'm online again. How's the phone? Is it better?
Listen, well, we're going to try it. We'll try it right now and see if it works out any better, brother. really quick, Gabriel, go ahead and re-ask the questions you're asking Jesse, and hopefully this time around it works out, man.
I was just curious. Talk to me about the weight. Are you going to fight at junior welter or welterweight?
Yeah, we're going to stay at 140, junior welterweight. We're going to stay here for a while, I think. I make the weight easy. The only reason we do 142, 143 sometimes because, you know, it's the way the contract comes because of my you know, the other fighter that he wants that weight at that. Well, he wants that weight, you know.
But, how long do you think you can do that? I mean, you've got a big frame. You're almost like, dare I say it, Antonio Margarito-esque. You're really big for the weight class, and you're kind of a come-forward, you know, a pressure-type fighter. How long do you think you can carry that weight before having to move up?
I would say maybe more than a year, I think. A little more than a year.
Because
I mean,
than
I make
year,
the weight easy right now. Yeah, a little more than a year. Because I make it easy right now, so I don't have no doubts of not being able to make the weight. Yeah.
What was that?
I mean, the day before. I mean, I still eat the day before the weigh-ins. I still eat. You know, that's how easy I make it. So, I don't think I have a problem anytime soon. And then you're right. I am pretty tall for that weight division, but I don't know how I make it. How I make it so easy.
This is like those commercials. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now?
hey, Jesse. Hey, brother, we appreciate you calling in and taking the time to speak to us. You know, we're going to definitely keep a close eye. And hopefully next time we can get you and your trainer, Roger, on at the same time so we can talk a little bit more about boxing and a little bit more about your career. And just keep racking up the wins, brother.
All right. Thank you. And by next time, I'll get a different phone.
Maybe a landline.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you guys, and thank you for having me. And yes, next time I'll talk to Roger, so we can set something up.
All right, man. We look forward to seeing you fight again, man. You're always exciting, and definitely one of the bright spots in the sport. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
It was like interviewing an alien. That was kind of funny. It didn't sound like an 80s video game.
It did. It was almost like,
it's like when you die in Pac-Man, you know?
It was actually like, I for a minute, I felt like I was playing that Centipede game. Remember that game?
Yeah. I was getting ready to start hearing intruder alert, intruder alert.
Die, you know? Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, you know.
Definitely, he fights better than his phone, I'll have to say.
Yeah, he's definitely really exciting, and, you know, it's, like I said, it's ironic that he's being trained by a guy that called himself the Mexican assassin, you know,
yeah.
Roger Mayweather.
Yeah, he's kind of funny.
And Vargas is out there handling his business, you know, and it also shows you the variety that Mayweather brings to the table because most of the time, you know, when you think Roger Mayweather, you think Floyd, you know, defensive mode, you know, sometimes a little overcautious, and Vargas just kind of erases all of that.
Yeah, you know, the difference, though, I think, with Roger and Floyd, and I remember them bringing this up more early on when Floyd was Senior was trying to come back and train, was that Floyd Senior is kind of the defense. He's the one that kind of implemented all that in Floyd and is more the cautious safety first guy. Whereas Roger is a little more of the offense guy. Like he still operates out of that same system, the shoulder roll and all the different things they do, but that he is a little more of the aggressive guy and that wanted Floyd to be more offensive minded, certainly before 147. Now Floyd's fighting bigger guys and so they're fighting accordingly. I think it does kind of fit, but it certainly isn't what you think of when you think of a Mayweather. But I remember the first time, you know, seeing Jesse Vargas, you know, and thinking to myself, it's the same thing I thought when I saw James Kirkland, the same thing I thought when I saw Danny Jacobs, was that this is a future title holder at the very least. You know, this guy is kind of a man among boys. He really brings it. He gets it inside the ring. He thinks. You know, he still needs to add some tools. He needs to add the jab a little more. He needs to go to the body even more often, I think. You know, Roger Mayweather was yelling, go to the body the whole time. And I think the main thing for him is that he needs to learn how to see it all. You know, that's when you look at Floyd, that's the thing that he does most is he sees everything. And before it happens, he's able to react to it. And, you know, in time, I think he's with the right people, certainly. Jesse Vargas will begin to see things, and I think he's going to be a big name in this sport.
I think so, too. You know, and like I said, the way he keeps coming into the ring in that pressure style, and he's definitely got a lot of pop in those hands, you know, and he keeps moving himself the way he does, and does correct that he's, you know, he's well aware of he's definitely a mega, mega force, and being a tall, strong kid, and young as he is right now, he's definitely got a bright future in the game. You know, I like I said before, you know, the MMA world has said it over and over, you know, boxing is dead. It's not going to be dead when we got kids like Vargas and Benavidez and Gomez and, you know, Livingston's and Gonzalez and, you know, Perez and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that are just, you know, definitely riching up the sport, making sure that the roads of boxing are staying gold.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people like you were joking at the top of the show. People always say, you know, this sport's dying and this and that. It's like, well, you're just not paying attention. You know, granted, we don't have a show like The Ultimate Fighter where we feed them right into the monopoly known as the UFC, you know, and build the stars that way. And I think, you know, the UFC has done a hell of a job doing that. Boxing has tried that kind of format. You know, with the contender and the next great champ. And it ultimately has kind of failed to kind of feed, you know, names. I mean, we're barely seeing the first season contender guys actually start to do things, you know, in the sport. I mean, you know, Saki Obika, some of the guys are making little bits of noise. But, you know, ultimately it didn't really quite do what I think boxing wanted it to do. Now we've got, you know, we've got shows like this, like the Fight Night Club, you know, the Solo Boxeo, is making its return and showing guys like, you know, Frankie Gomez and bringing that to the public. And I think, you know, ultimately the sport is very talent rich at the lower levels. There's a lot of young guys out there. And I think the sport's going to be around for another 100 years at least. We're not going anywhere.
No, it's not going anywhere, you know. And like I said, having Jesse Vargas, who's a kid that could definitely make welterweight, and having him, you know, in venues where you could see them, like putting them in Club of Nokia, like you said before, that's a great venue. You know, if anybody's never attended that, that's something you want to go because it's very compact and it's very personable. You know, you go and you're right there. It's in your face, you know. So, and a lot of the times the fighters after their fight, if they're not, you know, too messed up, they don't have to go and see the doctor, they come out and they greet you. So it's a great way of building their fighters. I think Golden Boy is doing a fantastic job and doing that there. But for some reason, Golden Boy keeps getting themselves in back news. They've been suspended by the New York State Athletic Commission. Like to hear a little bit about what Gabriel's got to say about that. Any insight or what the real story, what's happening with Golden Boy at the moment?
This story, you know, it was broken a few weeks back by Tom Hauser on Seconds Out. It's the Max Boxing sister site. And then it was really broken down very well by George Kimball this week. Basically what happened, what the accusation is that, and I'll read from Kimball's piece, disciplinary action came, basically Golden Boy has been suspended from doing business by the New York State Athletic Commission in the state of New York. Why they've been suspended for that is because HBO agreed, this is from Kimball's piece, entitled Exclusive Golden Boy Promotion Suspended by New York Commissions on thesweetscience.com. It came as a result of some creative accounting. This is quoting George Kimball. With the co-featured bout of on HBO with Victor Ortiz and Nate Campbell, HBO agreed to underwrite a total purse of $750,000 for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell was paid just $125,000. Ortiz was paid even less. He was given $100,000. The $500,000 discrepancy there, there's $500,000 missing there, was apparently concealed from both the boxers and had Golden Boy had its way, according to Kimball, it would have been concealed from the New York State Athletic Commission as well. But unlike some of its other commissions, New York refused to roll over and play dead, and they kept asking and asking for the paperwork. What they're claiming is that Golden Boy essentially broke the Muhammad Ali Act, which prohibits concealing arrangements like that from the hired help, in this case, the boxers. So basically they're accusing them of possibly either just taking the money and kind of hiding it, or taking the money and funneling it over to the Amir Khan Pauly Malignaggi fight. What Kimball insinuates is that one theory is that they had they weren't able to make all of Amir Khan's high purse demands, and so they shuffled some of that money over to Amir Khan. Another theory is that what they did was because some of these fighters that they have, Amir Khan and Victor Ortiz, I believe Nate Campbell as well, because they used to be under contract with other people, now they're with Golden Boy, although, Malignaggi's with Lou DiBella, they had to kind of shuffle around some money to them, kind of behind the scenes.
Right.
That money should have come out of the promoter's pocket. And what the NSAC is, or the New York State Athletic Commission is accusing them of, is taking money from one card and then using those fighter purses, the money that HBO allocated for that fight, and shuffling it over to pay off those debts. As far as any sort of insight that I have personally as a reporter, I'm still looking into the story. At this point, I asked Golden Boy to come on. At this point, they have no comment. And they're still probably just getting their legal ducks in a row. And this story should probably break a little bit more in the coming weeks.
Now, in terms of...
Hopefully that was clear.
I think it's about as clear as what everybody's getting at the moment, because it's very unclear of what's really going on. Are they skimming? Are they fiddling around with the books, the accountant books? We don't know. These are all speculations. Whether or not, there's a lot of money involved in these promotional deals and promotional groups, where things can be. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt, until there's no more benefit to not doubt them anymore, and whatever the case is if they somehow slipped, well, pick yourself up and correct it. That's just it. There's no other way of getting around it. If you did commit an act against the Muhammad Ali bill, fix it. I can certainly understand that, sometimes you don't make the amount that you were asking or hoping to make, so you got to kind of fiddle around and pull from other spots. The problem is that you have the whole world watching you. It's not as easy to kind of shape, because in all rights, you got to say maybe Golden Boy had their good intentions. But sometimes your good intentions can be looked as a bad intention, and it could be kind of overthrown out there, to make them look like the bad guy, where they're like, well, wait a minute, we're a business. If we didn't do this, we could have went under.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that there's a lot of rumblings out there. I've been hearing this rumor for month and a half, that Golden Boy isn't quite as flush as people would think. Granted, they have a nice deal with MGM, with the MGM Grand, and they have a nice deal with HBO in terms of an output deal that runs out sometime, I think, in a year and a half. And so they have all the prime HBO dates. But right now, when that deal was put together, they had Oscar, and now Oscar's not there. And in a sense, Oscar was able to, no matter how the company did throughout the year, Oscar could come back, do a show, and they would have a huge cash windfall. They would do a ton of pay-per-views. But then, Manny Pacquiao happened, Oscar retired, and now they don't really have that flagship star. They have to develop all their young talent in a hurry. You've still got like Bernard Hopkins fighting, you've still got Shane Mosley, but they lost Pereira. They don't really have, top name talent. They have Mayweather. But look how often he fights, once, maybe twice a year. If this Pacquiao fight doesn't happen, he probably won't fight this year. They've also got to make his salary demands. And as many pay-per-views as he sells, he's not the biggest gate draw in the world. They have to give away a lot of those tickets, and then they don't always sell out. So the rumor I've been hearing is that Oscar might actually be coming back. There's a couple fights that are that are being talked about, there's a possibility of Chavez Jr. and Oscar, which is a winnable fight for both guys. But there's also a talk that if Pacquiao Mayweather doesn't happen, that Pacquiao, or rather Mayweather versus Oscar De La Hoya Part 2 could happen. And it's a way of, you know, once again, of just kind of getting flush with money. Now, I don't know at this point, you know, if Oscar is quite the draw that he used to be. You know, everybody saw that first fight. One, it wasn't close, despite the scorecards. And two, it wasn't very exciting.
Right.
So I don't know how that fight's going to do. But that's the rumor right now, is that I heard this from a very good source, and then I backed it up with another very good source, that these rumors are very strong and that Oscar is very possibly coming back. So we'll see. You know, this is all, you know, I think it's all kind of tied into each other, that if you're a company that is as big as Golden Boy has to shuffle around money like this. I don't want to jump the gun and say there's just chicanery there and they're a bunch of bad guys and this and that. What I will say is that maybe the money isn't quite as flush as we would think.
Exactly.
That they had to do this. You know?
And a lot of people are forgetting that Golden Boy is still a baby promotional group. They may look massive because of Oscar De La Hoya, but in terms of being in business, they haven't been around like Top Rank, you know?
No, they're very, very young.
They're prospect within themselves at this moment.
Yeah, and you see them kind of – it's almost unfair to them because Oscar's so high profile and their connection to HBO was so great that they got at the top level right off the bat, and everybody said these guys are the best promoters in the world. This is a tough business, and it's hard to learn how to do it, especially when everybody's watching. And you see, you know, some of the mistakes they've made in some of their prospects and how long it takes to develop some of these guys. We've watched them kind of grow up in public. And so, like I said, you know, I want to err on the side of just kind of caution. And before I kind of lay out judgment, I want to find out more facts about what's going on with this story. I think it's all indicative of that they're just very young. And this is not an easy business. I mean, look how long, you know, it's taken Top Rank, you know, and they've had their dips. You know, 2004, 2005 was a little bit of a rough time, you know, particularly when they lost Floyd Mayweather, who was going to be their next big star. And then Manny Pacquiao began to emerge. You know, you had other guys like Kelly Pavlik, who looked like he was going to be a star, wasn't, you know, kind of a falling star at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me tell you this, you know, going back with Top Rank, like I said, you would have to say the veteran of the sport, okay, the Bernard Hopkins of the promotional groups. And one thing that Top Rank has figured out and has embraced is the internet. And to stay functioned in this game of boxing in business, you need to embrace the internet, you know? Meaning that you got to embrace the guys that are the newcomers. You know, I understand you don't want to keep the old guys around and have them, you know, do print. But print no longer exists. Now, when we hear the word MMA saying boxing is dying, it really should be rephrased as print is dying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think everything kind of changes. You know, I mean, I still think there's room for some, you know, for print. I mean, it does kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely room for everything.
You know, but that's the one thing.
To stay afloat, you got to embrace all media. You got to go, hey, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and I got to look at the overall view, okay, because, you know, some promotional groups are coming out, and, you know, I'm not singling out Golden Boy, but I'm saying as a business, you come out and you want to be in that plateau of above because that's the way you want everybody to perceive you as. But sometimes you got to look at things a little realistically and say, you know what, in order to keep my business pushed in the faces of the people that are the consumers, I got to embrace everybody from the little to the big. That's part of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in a sense, like looking at Golden Boy, and it's an interesting time for boxing because in terms of media and the way things are changing. You know, like last we had the Saul Alvarez fight, and it was on WBC TV. You know, it was on the web. It was streamed by a sanctioning body, which is kind of strange. You know, but at the same time, it was great because, you know, most people would not be able to see a guy like that. And I think that Alvarez, as in my opinion, more upside than Chavez Jr. I think he's a guy that wants to fight. He's a guy that has a lot of fire in him in the gym, from what I'm told. Works really hard, and is a very big star right now in Mexico. He's got a definite following, and no one looks at him like, oh, you're only here because your dad is famous. But, you know, in terms of, like, Golden Boy, they're learning in a big sense, and Top Rank, too, and how to deal with new media. You know, social media has become huge with Twitter and Facebook, Ustream. And Golden Boy seems to, in my opinion, embrace it. You know, but the other side of the coin is that because it's so easy to come out with your own website or your own podcast, you know, the landscape has been littered is not really a good word. Bombarded would be another word I would use. With a ton of websites, a lot of upstart companies. As you see print kind of die, and you see social media and websites kind of rise, what you're losing is quality. You know, the quality of the writing. I did an interview with Ann Wolfe last week, and it was so long. I did a 30-minute interview with her. Usually I do 10 minutes. That I had to do it in two pieces. And they were both very long pieces by web standards. They were 2,600 words each. And I had a guy tell me, man, these are long. Why didn't you do a video? And I'm like, you know, because I'm a writer. You know, and the quality of the writing, you know, my ability to tell a story is what got me here. And for me, print isn't really dead. It's just digital now, you know. But I think that's the thing is why some of these promoters don't embrace all the websites is because there's so many. And the quality isn't always there. And they kind of want that. And I think they're still kind of holding on to when print was alive. You know, if anything, boxing is thriving.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right when you say, you know, every day you see a new website or a new, you know, podcast or whatever the case is, whoever decides to pick their poison, it pops up fast. But it also shows you, even though the quality name may not be the greatest, Gabe, but it also shows you that it has intrigued people to speak their minds about a sport that supposedly shouldn't be around any longer. Unfortunately for promoters like Golden Boy and other promoters that are trying to come up, they're coming in an era of recession. A recession, meaning that they got to work three times harder to keep their boat floating in an ocean that may sink you a lot quicker in time frame than it would have happened maybe 10 years ago. You know, and that being said, that means the PRs to the public, I mean, the public relations people, to the people that work in the office, working on the numbers, just means they got to look a little bit deeper into the people that are being the people that are publicizing these fights, these people that are pushing, these people that are driving the sport into the fans' faces and trying to bring new fans into the sport to keep it alive, because those new fans are very much needed, and the fans that we got right now should be very much praised because of the times that we're in at this moment. You know, going back to our prospect watch, I believe we have another guy that is keeping the sport, this beautiful, lovely sport of ours, boxing, in the limelight, and his name is Chris Avilos. Chris, we got you on the line, brother?
Yeah, what's up?
How you doing, man? Bantamweight, Chris Avilos, 16-0, 13 KOs out of Lancaster, California, 20 years old. Last fight was in April against John Alberto Molina. Did easy work in two rounds. Scheduled to face Javier, Gallo, August 6th in Minnesota at the Grand Casino. And he's trained by a Hall of Famer, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. And his best performance so far has been over Jose Nevis, who was 17-1 at the time. Extensive amateur career, 96-14 amateur record. He's been in the Junior Olympics, Golden Gloves, PAL titles, turned pro at 18 years old, and has been on ESPN three times and Showbox. And you got to say the pace that you're going in right now, Chris, has been fantastic and lovely. How's your feelings, man, about your pace right now in the boxing world?
My feelings with my pace, it's more like the pace that they're taking me in, because I'm really looking forward to this fight that's coming up, actually, and you know what I mean? Like, I've just been focused and just ready to go, and like I said, the pace that they're taking me in is just is great towards my feelings. And actually, you know what, I want to clear something up before going on with the interview, that Mustafa, he was training me at a time, but he was training me probably like my fifth, and I just want to make it clear that my dad is my trainer, so I just wanted to clear that up. My pop, Felipe Avalos, he's actually my real trainer, so just wanted to clear that up for everybody. Nothing against Mustafa or anything, because he's a great trainer, actually, you know what I mean? But I just wanted to clear it up.
Hey, no problem, brother. Thank you for clearing that up. You know, your dad, you're underneath your dad's tutelage with his fantastic, you know, Chris, some criticism right now as a prospect, with some would say defense is in lack right now. What do you think? I mean, obviously you're an exciting bantamweight in a rich division. When you go back and look at your tapes, do you feel like, hey, I got to work on this particular thing? I am getting touched a little bit too much so early on in my career.
Actually, you know, actually, a lot of people that say that I do need to work on my defense, it's actually true. You know, I need to work a little more on my head movement, and I need to need a box a little more. But I have been working on that, so you know what I mean. Come this fight, you know what I mean, it's gonna be a new thing. So it's I guess, you know what I mean, all the talk that you're gonna be hearing is just hopefully that they're going to realize and be like, all right, well, at least he's not getting as hit as much as he was. So now it's, you know what I mean, it's more like he's working on defense. So, yeah, I see that. I need a little work on defense. I see that.
This is Gabe Montoya. How you doing, Chris?
Yeah, I'm doing. How's it going?
I'm good, man. You're an all-action guy. It just seems to be an innate part of your nature to go out there and just kill the other guy. And it doesn't matter, you know, if you get hit or not, you know, which makes for great TV. But do you think as you work on your defense more that's going to hurt your offense at all, or is it just going to make you more of a balanced fighter?
I think it's going to make me more of a balanced fighter, to be honest, because I know I like to go out there and just, like, hammer on the guy and stuff, but I also need to keep in mind that I also could get hit and I also could get hurt too, you know what I mean? So I actually look at it like, you know, I think I just need to balance myself out even more, you know, like box more and just move my head more. So I think, you know, it should balance me out.
Now you moved pretty fast, man. You're 20 years old. You're 16-0 with 13 knockouts. And you've become, you know, a TV fighter at this point. Is there a danger for you? You know, as you move forward in TV fights, one, they get tougher. You're starting to hit a level where like 3-4 fights, you're going to be a contender. But that also, you're not going to be fighting as often. Is that a concern to you, that you won't be able to develop in the ring, in the fights as much? And so, you know, because of that, you're going to have to develop more in the gym?
I actually think, I always thought about that too. But I also thought about that, I guess it would be better for me because I would develop, like you just said right now, in the gym. Like, I'll actually step it up more in the gym than, you know what I mean? Because if I won't be getting as much as fights that I'm getting now, then, you know what I mean, I'll just need to keep my head up and just work as twice as hard than I do now, you know? So that's pretty much it. I think I actually will step it up in training, if anything.
You know, in terms as a prospect, you know, 16-13, you're almost leading, moving away from that, you know, Chris. And being as a bantamweight, going into the 20s, pretty soon, you know, you figured, I would say midway in next year, you're going to be in the 20 part of your record. What names is out there right now that you're looking at that you want to be able to really solidify yourself as a true contender moving into championship level?
Well, by now I keep throwing Abner Matas out there, but I don't know when that's going to happen, but I would like to fight him maybe someday. And maybe, what's that other cat's name? There's another dude. I actually forgot who he was. He has, like, I think it's like 13 fights or something like that. I don't know what it is, but
so we're Bam Bam Rio.
There's a couple dudes out there that I would like to fight. You know what I mean? But right now, I just leave it up to my management and up to my, You know what I mean? Up to them. And if they want to bring people my way, and we do talk about it at times, but it's up to them. You know what I mean? I'm willing to get in with anybody. I really don't matter who it is. But because I know what I could do, and I know that I stay fit and that I stay focused, you know what I mean? I know what I could do. I mean, I know there's other people out there that feel the same way but that I do, but I am confident, and, you know, I do have God by my side, so it's personally, I really wouldn't mind getting in there with anybody.
You know, Ander Morris had his great fight with Yanni Perez. And it looks like he's scheduled. I can't remember. For some reason, I went blank on what the next opponent that's been talked about for
going
him.
With the, he wasn't he going with the what's his name? The Russian dude. Was he Russian?
Ah, man, you know what? Gable, help me out, brother.
I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay, and well, and Yanni is. It looks like he's gonna go back in with Arbeco. And those two guys right now, you know, Yanni Perez, seeing what Yanni Perez was able to do with Ander Morris, is that something that you're looking at and studying and going, okay, I'm picking apart and both these guys? Because the possibility of Morris keen to keep moving up and Perez is, you know, going back to Albeco, it looks, you know, in terms of following up on fights and leading into fights, do you think that you might get a better chance of getting the winner of Arbeco or Yanni Perez, perhaps?
Actually, no, I was watching that. I was actually at that fight, and I've seen both of them, and I take nothing from both of them. They're actually both great fighters, very great fighters. But, you know what I mean? I mean, I would like fighting either or, but honestly, to me, like, Yanni Perez, he throws a lot. He's like a throwing machine. Like, you can't stop that guy from throwing, and he does not get tired. So the thing with that guy is that you just got a box, just like Abner Mares was doing that day. He was body, but also he was getting caught. So at the same time, like, I noticed with both of them that with Abner, he shuts down. When you go forward, he kind of shuts down. And with the other cat, when you box, he kind of doesn't know what to do neither. And I seen that. I mean, like I said, I take nothing from both of them, but I wouldn't mind getting in there with either or, so it wouldn't matter to me, like I said. But, like I said, they're very great fighters, though.
Absolutely, brother. Well, you know, Chris, man, I've had you on before. I believe it was your pro debut on Showtime. It was the last time that we had you on, and, you know, definitely an exciting fighter. Definitely a great interview for 20 years old, brother. Very mature out of Lancaster, California. And I gotta say, man, I really appreciate you taking your time on Sunday to speak to us, brother. And we can only wish you the best and luck in your career, and keep racking in those wins, man. And the boxing world will definitely always take notice and keep a close eye on what you're doing.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem, brother.
Good luck to you, Chris. All right.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. You know, a bantamweight, 16-0 with 13 KOs, definitely has got to pop in those gloves, you know, and a kid that, like I said, has been on ESPN 3 times. He's been on Showtime. You know, he's being pushed at a good pace, Gable, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a great pace where in terms of building a fighter and keeping them in the face and in the minds of fight fans, that's a pace that all matchmakers want to look at. But also, at the same time, be very careful in the matchmaking that you put your prospects in because you want to build them, not destroy them.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and at least he recognizes that he needs more defense. I remember watching him in the gym at the wild card, and it was just like, dude, this guy is eating them all, like, you know, eating punches like you know, a fat kid eats Twinkies. You know, it was just it was like, dude, you need some defense. And, like, you know, offense is great. You know, the TV executives love it. You know, obviously fans of the sport love it. But, you know, he's 20 years old, and he's eating a lot of shots. That makes for a short career. And if he's able to balance it out and not be like, remember when, you know, Asselino Freitas, who was very much a come-forward attack-style fighter, when they started to make him into a boxer, he got really confused, and his style went away. And hopefully, as Avalos just tightens up the game, adds that defense, he's not going to lose who he is as a fighter. He's not going to lose his identity. You know, but he's an exciting guy, and I always, when I know Chris is fighting on TV, I'll always, you know, tune in to see him because he's just pure excitement, you know, and he's got real legitimate power. You know, he can be hit and hurt, but when he lands on you, it's goodnight, Irene. You know, that's always going to be somebody that I'm going to want to check out. You know, just for me, the question is can he tighten up his game in time? Because, you know, at 16-0, he's about four fights away, and he's going to start fighting for maybe a regional belt or maybe even a title. Depends on how they move it, you know.
Absolutely, you know, and I believe we have our next guest on the line, which is Charles Huertas, featherweight, 23 years old, 13-1 and 7 KOs. Charlie, you on the line with us, brother? Charles, you on the line, brother?
Here, he's on the radio.
Charles, you on the line, brother?
Hello.
Charlie, how
Hello.
You doing, brother? Yo.
I'm doing pretty good, man.
How's everything going for you, man? I mean, I see you're scheduled to fight again against I'm trying to look it up right here. For some reason, it's not showing.
Yeah, it's cutting off. I can hardly hear you guys.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. You got a scheduled fight against Jonathan Arias. And so how are you feeling about that? How's training camp going for yourself at the moment?
You know, training camp was pretty good. I know Jonathan Arias is a tough opponent, man. He's a tough guy. And I'm just ready to go. It's been a while since I've been in the ring, so I'm ready to get back in there.
You know, Charlie, the last time, not the last time, but you had a blemish, you know, with Derek Wilson. And Derek Wilson seems like to be this guy that's just come out of nowhere and upsetting a lot of the Golden Boys. You know, well, not a lot, just last night, Friday night, he upsetted Rick Lopez. Now, looking at that, are you looking at Derek Wilson as, hey, I need my payback. I got to get this guy back. It was an off night for me, or?
Yeah, you know, I have that. Yeah, I had that deep down in me. I still, you know, I want my payback still, but, you know, when the time's right, that fight will happen.
At 23, and still a young guy, how hard was it for you to get back up from that blemish, man? I mean, really, honestly, how hard was it for you to look at it and go, you know what, okay, it happened, let me shake it off, let me get back in the ring, let me correct what I did, and let me show everybody that, yo, I'm here to stay?
Hey, you know, right away, I just put it right behind me once I was in the locker room. I mean, it's boxing, man. Things happen. Just put it away, and then I try to move on from that. And then got a good victory after that. Then next fight, I beat a guy that beat Wilson. So, I mean, I feel I'm back up there now.
Charles, this is Gabe Montoya. How you doing, man?
Yeah.
Was it easy to put that loss behind you because it happened so fast? It was a kind of a flash knockdown or a knockout, rather, you know, a TKO. But it happened so fast. It wasn't like he outboxed you for six rounds and then stopped you. It happened really quick. It was a shot you didn't see. And so was it easier just mentally to say, you know what, it was a bump in the road and let's just move forward?
Yeah, that's what it was. It was more of, I mean, it happened in the first end of the round. I didn't go in there and take the beating after a few rounds or anything, or I can't even say that Wilson's better than me because it wasn't even – it caught me with a good shot, and, I mean, it's boxing. Things happen.
Yeah. Now, in your last fight, the reason you've taken off a break is that you injured your hands. How are your hands doing? Can you talk a little bit about the injury and what you've done to correct the problem?
My last fight I broke the hand, and I broke my hand in the second round. It was worse than we thought. We had to have surgery. They actually had to put a plate and a screw in my hand. So, you know, went through therapy. Everything came out good. I'm ready to go now. Just using a little more padding now and the hand wraps. Probably won't be using the Everlast MX gloves or the Reyes anytime soon just to protect my hands. Use a little more padded gloves and stuff.
When I talked to you after the fight, you had said, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, so if you don't, you can just say no comment if you want. There was some question about the wrapping of your hands, and it was a new inspector. He didn't like you guys crisscrossing in the back, which is totally legal. Was that part of the problem, or was it the glove, or was it just bad luck?
You know, a lot of that came into play. We weren't able to tape like we usually did. and the whole fact that it was TV time, so we kind of rushed it into it, which is a mistake. The gloves, you know, the gloves were, those MX gloves don't have that much padding, so it was just more of bad luck. The guy had a real hard head, and I just caught him in the wrong spot. I mean, it happens. The guy had a hard head.
Going back to that, is that something that your camp and your dad have looked at and go, man, you know what? That really honestly bowls us up because of the fact that we do it a certain way and look what happened. I mean, is there any point in your guys' camp where they felt we need to point the finger at somebody for letting this happen?
Yeah, you know, because throughout the whole training camp, we tape the certain way. We wrap the certain way, the same way always, and then day of the fight, we have to do another change of style. So it kind of threw us off a little bit, but I mean, it happens. I mean, we're just trying to move on for it now and just protect now. We'll be more careful now.
So now you're heading into this fight with Jonathan Arias. This is, you know, it's a guy that's on a 6-fight winning streak. He's 10-6 with 8 knockouts, though, so we know he's got some pop to him. What do you know about your opponent? Have you watched tape of him? And how are you preparing for it?
Hello? We lost him, Gabriel.
I'm telling you, I'm starting a fighter phones for fighters movement. That's
you know
it.
What? I don't know if it's the fighters' phones or if it's our connection. You know, because we never had so many people have so many phone problems. It could be, you know, having so many. We always have so many problems with Block Talk. It's unreal, you know. So hopefully, Charles calls back in, and we can get it back another connection. He might have. I don't know, went into a tunnel, you know, driving. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those things and stuff. Well, hopefully he calls back in and we can finish conducting our interview. A little later, we're going to have Dontell Wilder call in, a heavyweight, the guy that made it to the Olympics, the guy that really honestly was the underdog, a rocky story in some ways, you know?
He's actually calling me on my phone. We'll give you a call. Just 1 second.
We'll give him a ring, you know, and
we're a full service company here at leaveitinthering.com. He called me on my cell phone. Let's just give him a call on Skype, and then we'll get him back on.
Here we go.
That's I think the, you know, kind of fun thing about these radio shows is. What we call in theater, like guerrilla style theater, you know, you're kind of putting it up, you know, seat of your pants a little bit, hoping it all works. The more I do this, I've only been doing this like 2 months now. The more I realize just how hard it is to put together a radio show, get guests on, keep them on.
And a lot of people don't really get it. They think it's just like, oh man, it got on, you know. Or I've had a couple people, you know, literally email me and go like, well, the reason why you get guests is because you're with Boxing Scene. No. We were getting guests way before we got with Boxing Scene, you know, it's always been in our hustle, you know, because we got a great team. You know, we got a great team that really honestly goes out there and puts in the work, you know, like from Red and Alex and everybody from yourself, Gabriel, from Stand and Fight, Art, you know, everybody that's involved. Helps out to the full momentum of making sure that we have the guests that we need on the show.
Hello?
Charles, what's up, brother? Sorry about that, man. I don't know if we dropped you or you dropped us.
Well, I don't know. Man, it happened.
This is boxing. Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead, Gabriel, and continue what you were asking, brother.
Well, I was asking about Jonathan Arias. You know, he's a guy with 8 knockouts, 10 wins, 6 losses, but he's on a win streak right now, 6-fight win streak. What do you know about him, and have you seen him fight at all, and how do you prepare for him?
I'm preparing like he's coming out the best. I know he's hungry for a win right now. I mean, what was it? He's on a little losing streak, so I know he wants to get a win, and a win against me probably would be the best thing for him right now, especially on it'll be on solo book sales, so it'll be nationwide. A lot of people will be able to see it, and I know he's going to come hungry to win.
Is there anything particular about his game that worries you? Power or speed or anything like that?
What was that?
Is there anything about his game that you're worried about in terms of his power or his speed?
I think more of his experience. I know he's been in there with Abner, Panchito Arce. He's just a tough guy, you know. Just looks like he's a tough guy. I'm not really worried about his power or anything. He's coming from a little lighter weight, so I think I might be the stronger guy in there that night.
In terms of experience, too, I mean, you know, fighting with a broken hand and still getting the win, going through a loss and rebounding from that, even though you're a prospect at this point, you've had a lot of tough roads to hoe in this sport. Do you think that experience is going to carry over and help you in this fight?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot of experience after this year. I mean, after suffering a knockout loss, coming back, the fight after that, I got my first cut. I had to deal with that. Then the following fight, I had a fight with a broken hand. So, I mean, I think I've tasted everything you have to come through. I mean,
yeah.
There's still a lot more stuff I got to learn, but I think I'm going through the hard parts right now. It's going to just benefit me later on.
Did you think it was going to be this hard? I mean, you know, boxing is obviously the hardest sport there is, but you've experienced a lot, man. Did you expect this, or is it a surprise to you?
You know, I mean, you got to expect everything. Being a boxer, you just got to expect everything. I didn't expect it to happen this early in my career, but you know, I'm glad it did, because it's better happening now than later on in my career, where I wouldn't know how to deal with it.
Right.
That's for sure.
Absolutely, brother. You know, hey Charlie, man, thank you again, brother, for calling in and speaking to us, man. It was a pleasure. I've met you a few times. I met you when you were in San Jose. You were on the undercard of the Kirtland and Ghost and Ortiz, you know, fight. And I met you and your dad, and you guys are great people and stuff. And only wish you to continue winning and doing well in boxing, because, like I said, you guys are the future of our sport. You there, Charlie? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me, brother?
Yeah, it's cutting off. But, yes, and thank you guys, man, for having me on. And, yeah, look out for that fight. I mean, we're coming back this year strong.
Yeah, man, we look forward to your next fight. You're always exciting, and we wish you well. Thank you very much for coming on, man.
All right, thanks a lot, man. See you guys.
See you.
All right, then.
All right.
Well, there you go. Charlie Huertas, with Golden Boy. And you know what? I got to say, you know, going back when we were talking about Golden Boy and this whole suspension, whatever the thing is going on with him, this is a perfect example of how many prospects Golden Boy has, you know. So hopefully Golden Boy can keep it holding it together in a time right now where it looks like they need all the fans that they can get to keep dishing out, you know, money to keep promoting these young prospects, because, you know, it's tough, man. When you don't got a mega star racking in the bill and you're already considered one of the major players in the sport of boxing, you need to keep generating the funds.
Yeah, and two, it's about building their company. You know, when you look across the street at Top Rank, you know, what they're known for, you know, beyond their big stars is Bruce Trampler and Goodman over there, their ability to develop young fighters into big stars. And, you know, they've got a guy in Jose Benavides, who I think is as big a star as there's going to be. You know, he's a good-looking kid, in tremendous shape, really knows how to fight. And if you see him in the gym, his and in the ring, his boxing IQ is very, very high for somebody that's only 18 years old. That's why they turned him pro at 17. They're going to have to compete with that. And I think they've got a handful of very young fighters that are going to be exciting, but it's going to be some time. You know, Frankie Gomez, I think, you know, is another exciting young guy. I think the jury's still out because his fights still aren't going that long. You know, he's still in there with guys that he's blowing out. It's going to be very interesting to see how they develop him, you know. But that's the big thing, you know. It's easy, you know, when Golden Boy first hit the scene, to take guys like Barrera and De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, Bernard Hopkins, and to some extent Winky Wright, and promote them because they're already names or already products.
Right.
The hard part is developing and bringing along that next star.
The hard part is developing any prospect, and especially if you're a prospect in the heavyweight division. I'm not sure, but I think we got the Browns bomber, the 6'7" heavyweight at the age of 24, Dante Wilder. Are you there, brother?
I'm there, Jesse. How you doing, man?
How you doing, man? 11-0 with 11 KOs. Last fight was with Dustin Nichols, went only one round, and yet you haven't passed three rounds in your pro career. You know, out of Alabama, you started boxing in 05 with just 14 bouts and was able to upset favorites in the National Gloves and U.S. Championship. You know, you went in with Isaiah Thompson, David Thompson, Isaiah Thomas and David Thompson, and Graves and James Zimmerman. And, you know, you were considered the no hope in 2008 Olympics and walked out as the most talked about and outlast all the favorites in the Olympics, brother. How does that make you feel knowing that you were literally a rocky story in terms of a guy that wasn't supposed to be the man?
You know what, Jesse, believe it or not, you know, I still think about my journey as I started as an amateur and all the way up to a pro now, you know, just competing against all these guys that have been doing it ever since they was kids and stuff like that and have defeated them. You know, I felt like at that particular time and still now that I wanted it more than them. It was something inside of me felt like I had to prove something that much more to the world than just, you know, my community, the people that were supporting me and stuff like that. So, I mean, even though, you know, all these guys have more experience than me and even still not in the pro ranking, you know, but my heart is like, I feel like I got one of the biggest heart in the game, and that will make me prevail over, you know, doing the things I do, the being aggressive in the ring, being wanting to be the main dog in the ring. Now when I get in the ring, I feel like I own it. I feel like I'm the king of the jungle in the ring, and, you know, it just makes me fight harder, man.
Absolutely, brother. Let me ask you this, you know, the pace that you're going right now in the heavyweight division, and it's a division that says that it's not as glamorous as what it used to be, and the pace that you're at, do you feel that, are you comfortable with that pace, or do you want to be rushed a little bit more?
I want to fight more. I want to up the competition-wise and everything, you know. You know, I tell people all the time, the hardest thing about being a human is having patience, you know, and I think I got a great team and they lead me on the right way. But, you know, I'm ready to hop that ladder two more steps, man. I'm ready to get on up there, though. But, you know, I'm following behind them. They're doing their job and I'm doing my job as well. They set up the fights. I get in there and destroy my opponent. So, you know, we're going that way. But, you know, I'm ready for whatever, man. It's sometimes I get that ball and feeling like, yo, let's go get somebody. Let's do it, you know. But, you know, only the future will hold the truth to everything. Because, you know, so many people got different opinions about, you know, me and my career and the people I'm fighting and stuff like that. But, you know, we're in the end, you know, it'll tell the story.
Absolutely, brother. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Hey, Deontay, how are you doing, man? This is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. You came along to the sport a little bit late. You know, you're still kind of in a developing process, despite how successful you've been. What do you think the timetable is for you? Has Golden Boy said to you by X fight, you know, you're going to be fighting for a title? Or do you still feel like you've got a long ways to go in terms of your development as a fighter?
Well, I don't think I have a long ways to go. And, you know, Golden Boy hasn't came to me personally and said I had X amount of fouls and X amount of bouts they want to see me fight to a title. I would love to have a time range that, you know, they would come to me and say, oh, okay, we want you ready by then and then be ready to go up. That would be great, you know. That would be awesome. But I haven't heard that. So we just once I get a fight, they let me know, my manager wise, and you know, and we go from there, you know. But hey, like I said, I'm ready for whoever. I'm ready to step it up, you know. I told actually I called Golden Boy yesterday. I talked to one of the guys. I'm like, yo, you know, I'm ready to step this competition up, or I'm gonna kill somebody in the ring. Because my last guy, you know, little did everybody know, I gave him a concussion. I knocked his tooth out of his mouth, which he swallowed it, you know. And right there, you know, throughout these fights, these guys, I done fought, I done broke somebody's wrist, I done bust the eardrum, I done damaged a ligament in the eye, and now I got, you know, now giving them concussion and knocking out their mouth. So eventually, you know, somebody gonna get really hurt, you know. So for me myself personally, I wanna test myself, you know. Everybody got their own opinion about different things, but you know, that, like I said, the time's coming sooner or later. You know, I hope it's sooner than later. And I wanna test myself because I put all the hours in the gym. You know, I wanna go those rounds. I want somebody to make me succeed. All my rounds and stuff like that. And stuff. This was the first guy that ever stood up to all my combinations I throwed at him. But, you know, in the end, it led to him suffering than I, you know. So, but if I could get a time frame on that, that would be great, you know.
You know, when you look at the heavyweight division, Dante, and you're looking at it, and you're seeing, like, American heavyweights like Eddie Chambers, who are not very big guys in terms of being in the heavyweight division. You're a big guy. Are you and your team sometimes a little frustrated? I mean, do you guys get to that point like, oh man, you know what? Why can't it, my time be right now? Or is it like, you know what? I'm just gonna keep watching. I'm gonna keep paying attention, and I'm gonna keep sharpening up the knives of my skills.
Right, we for sure pay attention. That's no doubt. But I'm always telling them, you know, I wish that was me. You know, I can't wait till my time and stuff like that. And I always get the answer, oh, you will. You know, just stay patient. Our time's coming. You know, because when I see those guys fight, you know, on TV, I make sure I watch them every time they're on there. And, you know, I'm always rooting for them too, because I'm ready to see the American heavyweight myself to get those guys out of there. And every time I put myself in that position on TV, and like, I can't sit in my seat, and like, I want them to do so good, and you know, all of them talk what they're gonna do and this and that, and when they get in there, they, you know, they act like they already the champion, and you know, fight like they don't want it. I mean, I'm like, yo, this is for the heavyweight championship of the world, you know. And we had this discussion all the time, you know. And, like I said, I mean, many questions I need answered to myself, you know.
Let me ask you this, you know, when you see, okay, look, when you came out of the Olympics, you know, and even at the time when you were in the Olympics, I was watching really closely and I was really rooting for you. I was just like, man, this is a great story. And, you know, you would be on the faces of the ESPN. You'd be in the faces of everything, commercials, if you got that gold. But I was really surprised. Even though you didn't get the gold, the effort spoke a lot in terms of value, in my opinion, because you've left everything in the ring on that point. But when you got out of there and you're seeing these other Americans try to get in with the big boys, the Klitschko brothers, I'm wondering, and I always thought, hey, I wonder if they've actually called Dante Wilder and said, hey, can we use you as a sparring partner?
Right, no, we haven't, no, they haven't called us for that.
Are you surprised a little bit? Because wouldn't you be the guy that people would want to use because of terms of height and athleticism?
Well, you know what, man? You know, every time we hear about one of the American heavyweights fighting for a title for Klitschko, we try to call them for, you know, if I know Kevin Johnson, they called us first, you know, try to get us to come in this camp. But, you know, it became like, from them calling us to us, like calling them, like, okay, we'll do it. We'll help y'all out with this and then. All of a sudden, we didn't hear no phone calls. We didn't hear nothing else back. I don't know why they backed out or nothing. But everybody, every American heavyweight that we went up for a title fight, we called them. Eddie Chambers, all those guys. And, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, I ain't trying to, you know, prove that to them that, you know, you get it, and when my turn come, I already know how you is, and I'm going to have you. I mean, I want to help them out, you know, and I do feel like that's kind of funny to me, you know. Every one of them that tried, we tried to give them, and, you know, they denied me, you know, because I'd be perfect for them, you know, with the height, the length of the arms and everything. And it's crazy. I mean, you know, Now we're trying to get one. We're trying to get one with Adamac now, right now, as we speak. He's fighting Michael Grant.
Let me. And I got one question. I know Gable's got another one for you, real quick. But do you think, in some ways, these other American heavyweights that have been in the stream of amateurs rankings, meaning that they know each other and they're communicating, where it could be in a way where they're like, well, this is a new guy. I don't really know who this guy. I'm not going to give him a paycheck. I don't want to give him a paycheck. In terms of maybe saying there's a little bit of jealousy there because you're the guy that just came around from the block and outshined everybody at a particular moment.
Right. Well, you know what, man, I didn't thought of all the solutions. I mean, all the different things that could have been. Why not? That could have been one of the reasons where, you know, and this guy, you know, we don't want to pay him because of, you know, he this and he's that and stuff like that. I didn't thought of so many different ways, you know, different things of why not. But you know, I think my most thing is they feel like I'm a danger to this sport, you know. That's what I feel, you know, because they know I got a big heart. They know I'm not going to bow down. They know that I'm a beast when I'm in there, you know. And that's just how a person is, how I feel, despite of, you know, oh, he's still learning the game. He's not going to be able to show me that in the ring, you know, which I feel they know that, no doubt. You know, I'm very competitive. Whoever they have in there won't last as long as I promise you that.
Early on in your career, You were pretty wild. You were kind of coming out and swinging for the fences and really just blowing guys out. I'm curious, do you feel like you're starting to settle down into more of a pro style and learning how to kind of relax and see everything in there?
But, oh, yeah, most definitely. All that, when you see me displaying wildness and stuff like that, that's, believe it or not, I'm comfortable. But, you know, I get that rage of, you know, I feel like I have to fight, you know, I get so, yeah, I'm having fun there, you know. I don't know, it just, some, when I get wild like that, it's just, I feel like, you know, like I said, I'm just having fun and, you know, I feel like I got the fight, you know, I done figured him out, you know, I can hear whatever. That's why, you know, it'll be big important once I up my competition where, you know, where I get wild, somebody punish me for those things, just like in training, you know, when I be sparring with the kids. When I see a mistake they're making, they don't really get on to it until I hit them and show them why they're getting hit, and then they come back together. But the more and more I fight, the more and more comfortable I get and stuff like that. That's why I think it's important to keep me active and keep me in the ring.
Do you expect to be at the kind of pace that you've been fighting at? I mean, you've been fighting pretty often. Are you looking to continue that all through the rest of this year?
Hopefully. I mean, we were fighting more often than now. I mean, now it's been, you know, fight 1 month, then, you know, won't fight for a month, then fight the next month. Now, when I first started out, we was fighting every month, if not twice a month, you know. So, yeah. Actually, it's kind of slowed down for me, it seems. I would like to fight two times a month, three times a month, you know, especially with these little first-rounders I've been, you know, getting and stuff, you know. Only time I sweat is when I'm warming up, you know. So I'd love to see more action in the ring.
In terms of what you need to develop right now, I mean, let me jump back. I'm just curious. Who do you, you know? You're a giant heavyweight. You're not Tyson sized, and that's the guy that everybody's looking for. But you have Tyson like aggression. Are there particular fighters that you model yourself after? Who's your favorite fighter?
My favorite fighter is Muhammad Ali and Tommy Hearns. You know, I don't have a current favorite right now. There's just those guys that that's always been my biggest favorite. Right now, it's just, you know, just in the thing. Every day I think about being a heavyweight champion of the world. Every day, because I know how much it is that Americans want to see a heavyweight, and whoever get that slot first to be named the heavyweight champion of the world, it's like, I feel like, they'll be like second behind the president. You know, everybody would know them. You know, like Jesse said, you'll see their faces everywhere. Man, it'll be crazy. And for me now, just, you know, just to be in the game as I am, I can. It's crazy, but I can feel that power, and I want to obtain that power. You know, So every day, not a day go by, slip my mind that I want to be the heavyweight champion, where even when I see boxing and stuff like that. So, I mean, y'all right now making me think about it now as I speak, you know. I might have to go to the gym out of this interview. Hello? 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 You just mean they're still alone? Hello?
All right, we're back. I'm, man. I'm telling you, man. Dante Wilder, you there, brother?
Yeah, I hear you. Hang on 1 second.
All right.
Hello?
Sorry about that, brother. We're having some technical difficulties over here. Let me go back really quick with that question I had for you. And the question I had for you is that, you know, every fighter needs a push. And well, sometimes when you hear particular fighters say, well, I'm fighting for this reason, it's not really believable, you know. But when I heard your story and I read a little bit about your bio before, you know, you went into the pros, the one thing that stood out about your story was that you said, I have to fight for the change of the lifestyle for my family, meaning I need to make money. There's no option for me. I got to make money. You have little ones.
Correct.
Do you think that that's what makes you a little bit more driven than a lot of these other American heavyweights?
Oh, for sure. When I feel like a person will have more drive if they're fighting for another purpose than themselves. I feel like when you fight for yourself, it's selfish, you know. Throughout my career, I've always been, especially my amateur career, has been about my little girl, you know. I feel like if I failed, I let her down, so I didn't want to accept failure. You know, so even now I still fight. Not only I fight for my family, I fight for all my support as well. I mean, back home, this is one of the reasons I'm still here in Tuscaloosa. I have so much support back here. You know, everybody look up to me, man. I'm like the hometown celebrity here, man. You know, and everybody want me to do well. Everybody can't wait till that time comes, me being champ and so like that. So you know, I feel like, man, all these people got me. You know. Now I'm looking up to me. It's like I'm the hope, you know, for the town, you know, and I like having that feeling though, you know, because all the time I feel like I was born a leader, you know, and I like to, you know, I had to carry USA on my back at the end of the Olympics, so I carry the whole world right here, you know. I told one person that interviewed before, you know, and my trainer Jay tell me all the time, you know. Throughout my whole career, always been up to me, to no matter what it was, like for the Olympics as well, and for now, the heavyweight division. And always, it's up to me. And, you know, I've been in this situation before, and I feel like it's going to be up to me this time as well, you know, whether some people want to believe it or not, you know. So I like that responsibility. I want that responsibility. I can't wait till my opportunity to come. I'm going to show up, and I'm guaranteed to show out. I'm not a person that's all about talk, you know, my action. I mean, if it became down to me selling tickets, they'll probably have to get somebody that can run their mouth because I'm the one that's going to show the action. I don't do too much of talk. I want to prove, you know, what I, you know.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. With 11 wins and 11 KOs, definitely showing, you know, the Bronze Bomber. And I don't know, your nickname may be changed, though, you know, Dante, to the last hope American heavyweight for us, you know, because, you know, if you keep winning the way you're winning, I think eventually people are going to be looking at you, not just as a hometown hero, but as a you know, country hero, you know, hey, you need to save us, man. You need to save back the glass division that once at one time that everybody talked about at one time, you know, the heavyweight was in all the news, you know, and it was on late night and everything else. Hey, Dante, brother, I really appreciate you calling in, man, and speaking to us on Leaving in the Ring. It was a great pleasure having you on, and we are definitely going to be rooting for you, brother.
Thanks, man, and anytime, y'all. Yeah, I want to talk about anything, just holler at me, let me know. I'm always willing.
Absolutely, brother. You take it easy, man. You have a good Sunday.
Same to y'all guys.
All right, man. Take care, man. Good luck to
you. All right, thanks, man. Bye-bye.
But there you go, you know, and if you were tuning in, we've had a lot of prospects, you know, Dante Wilder's the heavyweight American who's made a lot of noise, you know, was the wild card in the Olympics and was not really looked at doing a whole lot, and he ended up doing a whole lot, and 11 yeah. wins right now, 11 KOs, you know, having some technical difficulties, bear with us, you know, it's always like this on Leaving in the Ring. You know, it's just one of those things, you know, where eventually, I'm telling you right now, we're going to leave Block Top in the ring, you know, keep putting up with this kind of crap and stuff. I believe we got our next guest, another prospect who we've had numerous times on Leaving the Ring, who's also became a very close, good friend of Leaving the Ring, and that's Randy Caballero. Are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm right here.
What's cracking, man? Is your pops on the line, too?
Yeah,
I'm over here.
All right. Well, we got both the Caballeros out of Nicaragua, and you know, one guy was asking me the other day. He's a rap artist named Fuchente, who's from Nicaragua, and he's been following you guys off of Leaving the Ring. And he asked me, he goes, "Hey, you know, there's not a whole lot of video on him yet, but can you give me a description of his style?" And I said, "The kid's got a lot of pop. If you like Ricardo Mayorga, you're going to like that he has that kind of power, you know, being in a smaller weight division, but a way more polished Mayorga. Definitely a kid, if you're a countryman of Nicaragua, you're going to be rooting for him. If you're just straight up Latino, you're going to be rooting for Randy. Randy, when are you going to make some work of these guys that are stepping in the ring, brother?"
That what was that?
"When are you going to start putting in some work with these guys that are stepping in with you? You keep blowing everybody out."
It's not, I like I said, I never walk in there asking for a knockout. If it happens, then that's great for me, you know. My career is always going to last longer if I take them out faster. But, you know, the fighters are getting me, you know. I thought this last fight was going to last longer. I thought I was at least going to get to the second round, but it didn't. You know, I landed the punch that I needed to be landed to take them out.
You know, I heard that, you know, when you got in there, everybody was getting into to sit down and watch you fight, and people were getting up and getting some cervezas and some popcorn, but by the time they came back, it was done and over with.
Yeah, there's a couple of my family that they had said that they were trying to move to the closer seats to the ring, and when he got down to the seat and looked up, it was already over, and I apologize for all that, but I got to do what I got to do in the ring.
All right, let's go really quick with your pops here. You know, let me ask you. You definitely got a very hot prospect right now. He's with TKO, which TKO seems like they're doing a fantastic job. What other advice can you give your son to make sure he continues racking up the wins?
You know, this is one step at a time. We taking it slowly. It's going great. I mean, I've been in boxing, you know, all my life, and having my son is just—it's just a good feeling. You know, we just take one step at a time. TKO is doing a great job. Cameron Duncan's doing a great job. You know, they're willing to take this kid all to the next level, and I'm very happy for the work they're doing. I mean, he's doing his work. like I told my son, we just got to be prepared. This is a business. This is your business. So what you have to be, you have to be prepared for the next 2 years. You have to work every day to make a name for yourself. So that's what we're doing. He knows what I have to do. He knows what he has to do. So he's going great for us, you know. And I have a lot of experience. And I have people around us that have a lot of experience and at that level. And, you know, so we're going to push it to the ticket to bring more kids, that, you know, that we have in our valley that were coming up. And they'll be mostly our valley and these kids are coming up to become famous. That's what we're doing. And I'm happy for the work they're doing. And I'm happy for my son, what he's doing for himself. Yeah.
Marcos, let me ask you this. You know, Jesse Garcia, he works for me and stuff, but he's been going to all your fights. Hey, can you make sure that when Jesse goes to one of Randy's fights, for him to have a camera, you know, because he keeps messing out and everything. I don't know what's going on with that guy, man.
I'll talk to him. I'm going to have to buy it for him. You know what I mean? I'll buy it for you. I know he's listening right now. I'll tell him. I know. We'll buy it for you. Don't worry about it. And he's a great guy. You know what? I think Jesse Everything is part of our team. He's a guy that has been putting us out there. He's doing a great job, and I thank him every day. In fact, today we had a great morning. Something I've done with my kids is we went to play golf, and it was a good time for them. We went out breakfast. It was a great time. This guy is doing everything for my son, and we'll really, really thank him very much for all the work he's doing.
And Marcos,
leave it in the ring, too.
Hey, Marcos, this is what you got to do, because if I know Jesse, I've known Jesse for a long, long time. Make sure he's not double-fisted with those cervezas, because that's his whole excuse. Oh, the reason why I didn't film it is because I had one Corona in one hand and I had Tecate in the other, and they were arguing in between, you know, about who's going to go first.
No, you know what we do? I'll make sure he has a Bible in his hand before he drinks a beer. We don't drink around my house. He knows we don't drink, so he's having a hard time with me. We always just drink water. No, but it's going good. We love Jesse, man. And you know, for the time he's been doing this, it's just like, it's great. I mean, he's put in a lot of work. And as a matter of fact, last night we were watching some fights, and we were talking about what we're going to do. And he goes, don't worry, you know, leaving in the ring is putting Randy up to the top. And I really, one more time, I will say thank you guys for the support, for the you know, putting my son right there. You know, it's a lot of fighters out there. And then promoting my son this way, it is the most greatest feeling. I mean, this for me, I'm winning a championship. I come from a country that I left my country in 1982, 83, and then my dream is to become a world champion. It never happened to me. You know, I got married, I had my kids, and having my son representing the United States, now part of it is representing Nicaragua. And it'll be great. I think we have a lot of history to make in our country, especially in my town. Because it's a small town where I'm come from, and I was left the country knowing that I love boxing. And I go back over there, I open a gym, and then we promote it over there. And, you know, my son's doing a great job. It's going to bring me, if I die tomorrow, believe me, my dreams come true. I don't have to not ask God for anything else other than say, you know, it's been great. And, you know, not just that, I have my other three boys. My other two boys is that I have Ryan, who's 16 years old. Great fighter. He's coming up. I mean, great boxing skills. And I'm a little 11 years old. He's 40 fights, no losses, and great boxing skills. So it's putting all the things in there. I'm so happy because my dreams have come true. I mean, it came the way I dreamed one day. I left my country dreaming on a big boxing TV. And my kids, one of my kids have to make it. I hope all make it. And it'll make me, I mean, very happy in my future, in my life.
Absolutely. Randy, really quick, let me ask you this. You know, how important, you know, you hear the passion from your dad, okay, leaving Nicaragua, coming over to the States. Obviously, like every other, you know, Latino parents, they come to the United States to give their kids the opportunities that are obviously not given to them in their own country. But seeing that, hearing that passion, and obviously that weighs on your back, but you have a country that hasn't had a great champion since Alexis Arguello. How much pressure is that for you to make sure that, you know what, I got to put Nicaragua back on the map? You know, Ricardo Mayorga did it for a moment, but in my opinion, wasn't a great reputation of what Nicaragua is all about.
Oh, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, I have my dad right there with me. If I don't, I don't think if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I'm at now. You know, I give him all the credit that he's put me there. I without him, I wouldn't be here. And, you know, to represent Nicaragua was one of the greatest feelings. You know, I love that country so much. And you know, I hope I can put that country out there again. You know, knowing that Alexis Guerra was a great fighter. You know, I love seeing him fight. I watch his fights on YouTube, and, you know, one of a great fighter. But I want to put my name out there, not only for the U.S., but for Nicaragua as well.
Randy and Marcos, welcome. This is Gabriel Montoya. I'm with Max Boxing.
Hi.
and Leave It in the Ring. Pleasure to have you guys on.
Thank you.
I'm curious, you've got, you know, 4-0, four knockouts, and you're stopping guys in the first round. You know, you're becoming like a don't blink TV, you know, because you'll miss it. Is there a thought that now it's time to step it up and get somebody in there that's going to give you some rounds?
Go ahead.
No, like I thought, like the last guy if I had fought, no, I obviously I seen him fight, you know, very aggressive fight, and I thought it was gonna last, you know, in that when I was in the ring with this guy, you know, I thought I was more calm, you know, I was, you know, trying to jump into the punches a little, but I heard my dad in the corner just told me relax, it'll come natural, so I just sat down and I relaxed. And then it came naturally. You know, knockouts come natural. You can never, you know, ask for them to come. But, you know, I'm happy. But whatever guy it is, I'm going to step in the ring with them and put 100%.
And let me say this. You know, no fight is easier. Right now, I think in the beginning of the career is the hardest part in boxing because you got these guys, even though they have losses, but they don't have nothing to lose. They're going to fight. You got two hands, two fighters with two hands. They're going to throw punches. I mean, even though they have losses. This guy that we last one fought, he came out from Puerto Rico, fight an Olympic guy. He fought another kid from Connecticut, which is Luis Rosa, good fighter. We fought him at the, when they were little. You know, last him, I don't know, it doesn't show in his record. And he fought Gary Russell, which is a good fighter, Olympic guy. You know, so we put his right there on the map. If we don't come out, like I told, always tell my son, and like he admired Mayweather, his style. He's a boxer with intelligence. He boxes like he's sparring. Dominates a fighter with intelligence. And that's, you know, we're trying to teach him that. Not the same way. Every fighter has a different style. Everybody has a different mind. But, you know, there's something you pick from every fighter. You learn from every champion. And that's what I'm trying to put on my son. And it's working good. So far, it's been good. And I told him, don't look for a knockout. We train hard. We spar enough for gold. Six rounds, if they have to. I mean, in anybody who spars with us, they know that Randy has enough air. We're not training. We'll go, okay, knock him out in the first round. But, you know, it's been great. I mean, we were going to go. Now we talked to Cameron Duncan, and he said, well, now we're going to the next step. Let's do it. You know, we're going to go one step at a time. I know my son kid's going to take it. We're going to take it slowly. The longer it takes, the better it is. Like you say, he doesn't want to last forever in the sport, but that's what everybody says. You know, but
Marcos,
I hope it goes good.
Marcos, is it too early right now to start looking at particular opponents for Randy? Is it too early in his career to start maybe fingering certain opponents that would give him more exposure?
Well, what we do is just like at the beginning of the first fight, it was a. Remember, Randy has over 170 fights. And not that many losses. And now I show you on the book, and people who knows Randy is a warrior. So what we do one step at a time. We have experience in the ring too, but not as a professional. But we're taking it slowly. They'll call us. Cameron Duncan is very particular. He really, really, and I'll say this, you know, he's really careful about what he gets. You know, if he's competitive. Now that, like I say, after the fight, he came out and asked me, "Marcus, you ready to step it up a little bit? Let's do it. If you're ready, we're ready." We're ready for anything, you know, and that's what we take one step at a time. We don't look for whoever they put us in. If they think it's good for my son, we go to the next step. That's what it is.
Absolutely, and, you know, like I said, it's always a pleasure having you guys on, and we, you know, we definitely are fans of you guys, and we only want to keep wishing you guys the best and keep racking up those wins. And, you know, Randy and your dad, you guys are the future of our sport. You're the guys that are keeping the pulse pumping in our sport of boxing. So I appreciate you guys taking your time on a Sunday and calling in and speaking to us on Leaving in the Ring, guys.
Thank you. Know, I want to have me on.
I want to say this. Thank you, guys. You guys, and I want to say thank you, Jesse. I know you're – thank you very much, guys. It just is a dream come true. This is a make it to the – make it like you're a world champion right now. And I want to say, you guys, thank you very much for having us on your show to give us support, to believe in us. And believe me, if we make it far, if my son makes it far, even the rest will be right there. That's all I can say.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, there you go. You know, yeah, Randy Caballero, definitely a hot prospect. You know, TKO signed him up, and he's been handling his business, Gabriel. He's going in there, and he's blowing out other kids, you know. The only thing right now, but, you know, I think it's, what, 3 or 4 wins he has right now. So still really early in his career to really see the flaws that are happening with him right now to see whether or what he needs some fine-tuning in. But, excuse me, but when you see a smaller guy – do the things that he's doing, you know, and I believe he's a bantamweight. I forgot to mention he is a bantamweight. When you see a guy at his stature blowing out guys, you know, within a certain amount of seconds in a round, you know, first round, second round, or whatever the case is, you know, okay, he's got dynamite. He's exciting. Or is he being put in with some fishes? That's what makes it exciting.
Yeah, I think right now, I mean, he's being, you know, put in with guys that are going to give him a little bit of experience, and he's blowing them out. I think the last guy was there to give him rounds, and he didn't give him any rounds. So, you know, Cameron Duncan is a smart guy, and TKO is really developing as a promotional company and really moving along guys very well. And so I think, you know, I think right now, it's like you say, it's the early stages. We won't find anything out until somebody takes him 3-4 rounds. Like, you look at Charles Huerta, who's got 11 fights, you know, or 12 fights, and he's learned a lot about himself. But all of a sudden, he went from blowing people out to getting a cut, getting a loss, hurting his hand, and then returning. And now, you know, he's looking to go back to continuing his winning ways, and he's better for it. We'll see in the next 4 or 5 fights with Randy as Cameron Duncan and TKO step it up. We'll see what he's really made of. You know, I'm curious. It's like you look at Arguello, you look at Ricardo Mayorga, and now Randy, what's in the water in Nicaragua, man? These guys got dynamite in their hands.
They do.
Those guys, you know, you look at like a Marcos Maidana, who, you know, is not from Nicaragua, but South America, man, they breed some serious power punches. Ricardo Torres is another guy that just came out of nowhere and just has dynamite. It's kind of exciting, man. I'm a sucker for a power puncher. I love a guy with a lot of pop that a fight can end.
Well, of course, I know you are. You gotta be a sucker for a power puncher. If your nickname is, you know, steal your lunch money.
Yeah. Well, I got my lunch money stolen, but you know, the victors get to rewrite history. You know,
exactly. You know, and you're right, man. The people that are really honestly. That come out of Nicaragua, they got a lot of power in their hands. They come and you know, but like I said, you know, Ricardo Mayorga was more of a street brawler, in my opinion, that got successful. Where Randy, you know, Caballero is more of a guy that's got a lot of power, but got skills. But yet we have not seen how polished yet with those skills he can be.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think Emmanuel Stewart has always reminded us of this every time Mayorga fights, that he got a lot of run out of knocking Vernon Forrest out.
Right.
And then after that, you know, like I thought Corey Spinks, you know, actually won that fight. You know, the Vernon Forrest fight, the second fight, was much closer. He got a lot of run out of talking a lot and the danger of he could end a fight at any moment. You know, Arguello, you know, you know, certainly time showed exactly, you know, what he was made of in terms of being a great fighter as opposed to kind of a great mouth, you know, like Mayorga has proved to be. Incidentally, you know, Boxing Scene is just put up on their Twitter. They're reporting that Chavez Jr. versus Ricardo Mayorga is a very possible fight. And, you know, if Mayorga has to drain it all to make 154 anymore, that's the kind of fight that I expected Chavez Jr. to have. You know, a name fighter, but somebody that he could definitely beat. So we'll see, you know, just how things are going to go with him.
Well, let's, you know, so far the prospect watch has been great. You know, we have two more prospects left to talk about and interview. Our next prospect is light welterweight Angel Estrada out of San Diego with 4 wins, 1 draw, 2 KOs at age 23. His last bout was with Ramondo Ortega, went 14 with the unanimous decision. 2,000-pound gold medalist, quarterfinalist at the 2002, and national junior Olympian. He trains with Daniel Garcia, who is the trainer of Victor Ortiz. Angel Estrada, brother, are you on the line with us?
I am. How's it going?
Doing fantastic, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Just out here in Ventura right now, out here getting ready for a fight, training hard day in and day out.
So when you're training and all that, who are some of the guys that you go in and you work with to make sure that you're, you know, you're a clean bill stepping into the fight that counts?
Right now we've been working with Daniel Garcia as my coach and Mario Aguiniga. We've been working on some really nice things in the gym, working on some boxing and different looks. So I've just been feeling really ready for this fight. We've been training really hard. We're fighting July 22nd at Club Nokia in Los Angeles, and it's a big opportunity for me. I've been, you know, waiting all my life for an opportunity just to show my talents, and hopefully this will be it.
Now, you know, getting going over to Club Nokia, and we were talking to a couple of fighters that have been on Club Nokia, and me and Gabriel, my co-host from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring, you know, it seems to be that center stage at Nokia is a great place to keep, you know, fighters mainstream to the fight fans, man. Is that something that you feel that, hey, you know what, I'm honored to be on that stage right now because that seems to be a good spot to be at?
I actually am. I feel really honored. I feel like this is, you know, the chance of a lifetime for me. You know, I've been waiting, you know, I've been training all my life since I was 7 years old, putting in the work, and I've just, you know, I've been going to school as well, but I've been, you know, waiting for my opportunity, and seems like this chance is here at hand, and I'm going to make and take full advantage of it. Here I'm working hard. We've been, as I said, working with Mario Guiniga and Daniel Garcia. They've been really great people and working really good with me, and we've been working on the style, and everything's coming together. So, I mean, I'm going to be in, you know, one of the best shapes of my life coming this fight, July 22nd.
Do you expect is this going to be a six-round fight or a four-round fight?
This is going to be a six-round fight, my first six-rounder.
Oh, okay. My question was, you know, most amateur fights, you know, the four-round variety. How you're not going to make the transition, you know, as a pro, is it hard to make that transition when you're just fighting four-round fights and kind of still in that format and when you know, you know, I better score early and often or I'm not going to get the decision?
Well, actually, you know, this is going to be my first six-rounder, so I hope not. But I do know that, you know, six rounds gives you a little more time, you know, a little more time to set things up, a little more time to get in there and, you know, to pick apart your opponent. So I'm just hoping to, you know, get in there and we're going to be in the best shape. So we're going to be ready for more than six rounds, but we're going to be ready for those six and go out there and try to display our talent and just be in the best shape possible.
Your first opponent was Alex Ariza. That's not Manny Pacquiao's strength and conditioning coach, is it?
No.
I was supposed to say, there's a little bit of a rivalry already starting there. How do you feel in terms of your development as a fighter? Do you feel more settled in and more like a pro than an amateur now?
Oh, I do. I mean, it's been a big transition. I mean, coming from the amateurs to pro is almost like coming into a whole other sport. I mean, yes, you know, having national titles under my belt is almost like having a resume, but I mean, it's a big transition coming in from the pros to from the amateurs to the pros. I mean, you have to learn how to settle down, take a little more time, think a little more, but you still have to be quick on your feet. You still have to have quick hands, but, you know, the punches, they have to make every punch count. So I really feel that I've come a long ways and, you know, I've had a little bit of inactivity due to, you know, just the lack of help and support for fights, but now it seems like my time has come and I'm ready and I've been, you know, settling in and my punches are landing real nice and strong now and feel quick and I'm just ready to go.
One of the guys I followed from his pro debut till now is Daniel Jacobs. And through the process of becoming, you know, going from amateur to prospect to contender, now title contender, he learned that maybe his power wasn't quite what he thought it was. You know, he kind of discovered his identity, if you will, as he moved along. Are there things about yourself that you've learned along this process?
In a way, can you explain further? Explain your question.
Do you think that your power is it a matter of matchmaking? Do you think it's for real, or have you adjusted to the speed of the game? Just specifically, you know, what are the things that you've learned?
Okay. I can say I've learned a lot in this pro game. It takes a lot of sacrifice, a lot of discipline, as it does as an amateur. But now that you're in there as a pro, it's, you know, it's like now or never, and it's just time to go in there and handle business. I mean, there's no time for games, no time for, you know, if it's time to get your opponent out of there, it's better now than later, because, you know, you never know if he'll, you know, one punch can change a whole boxing game. So that's what I've really learned as a pro, is one punch can change a whole fight. So it's just about going in there, handling business, coming out, and just hopefully leaving with your hands going up, raising the sky, you know.
Now, when you say one punch can change the whole game for yourself in the ring and all that, now, is that something that you know, your trainer Garcia has been, you know, prepping you up about, repeating in your head, you know, telling you, like, listen, amateurs is different. You're in the pros. We got to stick to boxing.
That is one thing that Mr. Garcia has worked into my head. It's just strictly boxing. He's like, teaching me not to lose my cool, to keep calm, keep composed, and to know we're in there, we're good. We have all the conditioning we need, and we're going to go to the distance if it has to, but you know what, if knockout comes, it comes, and that's wonderful. But if not, we're going to go for that W either way.
Absolutely, brother. Well, Angel, I really appreciate you, man, taking the time to call in and speak to us on Leaving in the Ring, and we're going to wish you luck, and hopefully we get to see a lot more of you, not just on this Nokia, but after Nokia Club fight, and keep racking in those wins, brother, and keep our sport alive.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me on, and without a doubt, we'll be hopefully a big name soon. So keep a lookout then. All right. Thank you.
I'll see you at the fights, man. I can't wait to see you.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. You know, Angel Estrada, who's a junior welterweight, and another deep division, you know. It's somewhat of deep, huh, Gabriel?
I'm sorry. I had to step out just for one second. I had a business call come through. You know, light welterweight, you know, it's an interesting division, but I think, you know, because he's a prospect, by the time he moves into position to be a contender or a prospect about to take that next step, I think a lot of those guys are going to be at 147. You know, Tim Bradley's already making a debut fight at 147. Devin Alexander is certainly a guy that can move to 147. He's got the length and I think the power and skill to do it. You know, Ricardo Torres just retired. It's starting to thin out just a little bit, you know, but then you've also got the big names. You know, you've got Marquez, Juan Manuel, who's going to fight at 140. I think this next fight might be either 135 or 140. As I understood it, it was the junior welter fight. Juan Diaz has got a few more fights left in him. You know, I think these guys that we're interviewing are kind of the next generation. They're not necessarily going to be in position to take on the big names, with the exception of maybe Deontay Wilder, who I think can be positioned a little sooner. We'll see with him. I don't think they should rush him, man. He's our only hope right now.
You know what? You're right. And like I said, he hasn't been past three rounds. So, you know, he definitely needs those rounds in to be banked, and have investment, you know. Get a CD, because the whole fact is that when he gets into a guy that can take his punch and he gets into a guy that can figure him out and keep the range away, or in stature of height and size and athleticism, you're going to have to find out what he's made of, you know? Going to have to find out if he really fits the bill of being a world heavyweight champion. You know, definitely has been great. We have all these prospects. We got one more calling in a short bit. You know, other news in boxing. Saul El Canelo Alvarez fought in Mexico, scored a 6-round TKO last night over Lucian Cuello. I was going to say another name. Cuello in Jalisco, Mexico. He had dropped Cuello in the first and second round, only to survive to be stopped at the 6th round. You know, and that was a grudge match between both these fighters. You know, and Alvarez is obviously he's staying busy. He's keeping busy. You know, I know there's some talks of him coming down to be on the undercard of the Staples, at the Staples for the Mora and Mosley fight. I didn't have a chance to watch the Alvarez fight, man. You know, unfortunately, I wasn't close to any computer to log on because I know they were streaming it. But if I'm right, I'm pretty sure Gable did.
Oh, yeah, I'm a junkie. I was there. I was watching it. Yeah, I mean, you know, Alvarez impresses me. You know, he's an interesting fighter. He had a rough time of it in his last fight against Miguel Cotto's brother, who's a smaller guy coming up in weight, and really hurt Alvarez early. But he might be tightened up a lot of things in this fight. You know, hurt his guy and dropped him in the first and second round, and really just went to work. And he's a guy that's understanding who he is as a fighter. They turned him pro pretty fast with a very limited amateur background. So almost like Chavez Jr., he's learning on the job. You know, he's got a lot of fights. He's coming along nicely, though. And like I said, I think the difference between them is work ethic. You know, he seems to really want to work in there, really want to improve, listen to his trainers. Whereas Chavez Jr., that, you know, after 40 fights, they finally said, all right, let's bring him to L.A. for the wild card and let's develop him. Well, Canelo, you know, he's got the fan base. Women seem to love him. You know, men really dig him in terms of his fighting ability. He's a guy that I think, I'm not sure if he could be a crossover. He doesn't speak English. You know, Oscar De La Hoya was like the last perfect storm in terms of crossover. You know, but I think he's definitely a guy that can be built into a huge draw. He's already a big draw. And the bottom line is when he gets in there and fights, yeah, he's by and large, he brings the noise. You know, he's a guy that will get in there and trade. There's still, you know, certain things I think that are missing from his game. The offense does have a tendency to drop off. When he goes for it, he really goes for it. But there are times when he moves too much for my liking.
Right.
But, you know, that's just style. And again, he's young and he's learning. And he's willing to learn.
I like his inside game. I like his overhand right. Well, actually, not even overhand. It's a straight cross. You know, he knows how to use it. He sets it up well. I like the fact that he, you know, he's a good kid. You know, he throws good punches. I like to keep seeing him being built up. And I definitely, you know, I got to say that, you know, in terms of a prospect, he's got 40-plus fights. He's still considered a prospect. He's definitely another guy we like to have when we do the prospect watch again. Along with Omar Henry, I know some fans are going to be writing me, I'm like, hey, I thought you were going to get Omar Henry. He's on vacation. So, we just set it up for the next prospect watch. You know, hopefully we can get him on. And among other guys. And among getting his guys that we had on again. Because I like to get some of the guys that we did have on, like Jesse Vargas again. You know, all the way down to Charlie Huertas and even Dante. You know, get them all back on again on the prospect watch because it's the whole name of the game. Brandon Gonzalez, you know, to Donnell Livingston, you know, and keep pushing these guys out there to give the fans a chance to, you know, really hear them up and close and personal and get a recognition with them of saying like, oh yeah, I heard of this guy. You know, so when you see his name, you know, on an undercard at the moment, you're going to be like, you know what? I heard about this cat. I'm going to sit down and watch what he's all about and make sure that, you're giving him that support because these networks do need the numbers to keep pushing it. We still need Talafaturo. We need Versus. We need any type of exposure in the boxing game, you know. And if you stayed up late Friday night like I do to watch Talafaturo solo boxeo, hey, you stayed up pretty late and you watch Eric Alandi, you know, Lara, have the ring announcer announce his name but not give time to the ring announcer to walk off the ring apron to go sit down because he was right back in right away because of the TKO that homeboy had. But under that card, above that card was an interesting fight that I was wanting to see because Derek Wilson is one of those flashy, fast kids. And he was up against another Golden Boy fighter, Rick Lopez, and he dropped Lopez twice in the first round. Had him in some serious trouble. But it seemed to me that Rick Lopez was kind of cold stepping into that fight. You know, it looked like he got his legs underneath him. It looked like he warmed up, and he was doing some work. The scorecards, I don't have them written down, but I don't know. They were a little one-sided in my opinion. I found it a little bit closer because, you know, Derek Wilson is one of those, you know, he just blasts you, you know, throws. He's a fancy fighter, you know what I mean? I guess that's the only way I can put it. You know, he's one of those kids that is explosive. There you go. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Like the old timers would say, there's a lot of sizzle and not a lot of steak.
I thought
Ricky is a guy. I've watched him since his pro debut to now, and despite the style, you know, he almost fights like a tiny like a Mike Tyson or something. He's very compact. He comes to you without the jab, and all the time, anyways, and then kind of gets near you and explodes. You know, he's kind of a squat, stocky guy, but he's a thinking fighter, and you can see him kind of the wheels turning in there. And I thought it really showed a lot. The fight was every bit as good as you and I had talked about it was going to be. He got dropped twice, gets up, regroups, and I thought it was a very close fight. I thought the majority decision for Wilson was just. Wasn't crazy about the cards, but I thought he did enough to win. I wouldn't have been unhappy with the draw, though, because I thought Lopez came in there and really sort of.
I thought he worked his way back into the fight, to tell you the
truth.
Yeah,
he did.
I thought he was able.
The knockdown just what hurt him, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We've seen stranger things happen in boxing, but not taking nothing away up against Derek. I like Derek Wilson. And if I remember correctly, the first time I saw Derek Wilson was he was on the undercard of Paul Williams making his debut as a middleweight against Andy Cole. And when I seen him in there, I said, man, I like this kid. Want to see him brush up, though. That's another prospect I love to have on Prospect Watch. But right now, we got a middleweight prospect by the name of Mama's Boy. You know, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't let the Mama's Boy nickname mislead you, because this 20-year-old kid has got some pop. He's got 5 KOs on his 9 wins resume with no blemishes on it. He's a middleweight out of New Jersey. He's a southpaw. His last fight was with Joshua Onanga, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He TKO'd him in the second round. He's scheduled to fight again in Mississippi against
Martez Logan.
There you go. And it's going to be in DeSoto Civic Center. Dennis, are you on the line with me, brother?
Yes, sir.
There we go. Dennis, so how's everything going for you, brother?
Everything is good, man. Just in the gym, training, getting ready for next Friday.
You know, he's... Originally, he was at the Rivera Boxing Gym, but that closed down, and he started going to the Gleason Gym. 2-time Junior Olympics, you know, Junior Metro Championship to New York Golden Gloves champ at the age of 16, 2-time New Jersey Golden Gloves, 2007 Ringside Champ, 2007 PAL Champ. Extensive, very extensive, and very needed in this hard world of boxing, man. And the interesting story about you is that your mother trains you, right?
Yes.
Let me ask you, how does that work out for you? I mean, normally mamas don't want their sons to go in there and mess up their pretty faces that they gave them.
Well, it works out great for us. I mean, she's always been in boxing. She's the reason I started boxing. She was in the gym from the time I was like 6-7 years old. So I used to follow her along, go to the gym and watch her train. And she forced me to start doing it to protect myself because we grew up in a rough neighborhood. And at first I was ashamed that my mother was working with me. I felt like the kid that everybody's going to make fun of. But now it's like, it's great now, man. I love it.
You know, I was reading a little bit about your bio, and we had you on a while back when you had barely started. I believe you were on when we had Joshua Kalati. You were before him and stuff, and we had spoke to you about that. You know, the Mama's Boy nickname, and but I was reading your bio. The reason why your mom got you involved in boxing is because you didn't have much luck in a street fight, right? And she was like,
yeah.
"That's it. That's it. He's going to learn how to, you know, put his knuckle game up to par."
Yeah, I was in a fight in school, and she seems to think I got beat up. I still think I won that fight, but she says I got beat up in the fight. So she told me that I need to learn how to defend myself a little better, so that's why I started boxing.
In terms of your mother training you, you know, and I'm pretty sure, like you said, I'm embarrassed, you know, because I'm the kid that's sticking out of the crowd, you know. I'm the one right now where everybody's kind of looking at, and the attention is being drawn away from you, you know. So how difficult is that for you, Dennis, when in terms of do you ever feel any conflicts there with your mom, you know? Is there too much attention going to her as your trainer? I mean, is she just another typical trainer? The only thing different is she's a female, and another is that she's your mother.
Well, I feel like I can say it's the same and it's a little different because it's the same because she's teaching me the basic skills of boxing. She's working with me just like any other trainer, just like Mayweather works with his uncle or just like Freddie works with his fighters. It's pretty much the same thing. But I think I like the fact that it gives me the crowd and everybody staring at me because I love the attention. So, I mean, yeah, people look at me a little bit more difficult and give me a sterner eye, like, oh, he's trained by his mother. Let's watch this kid. Anything I do wrong is reflecting on her. Like, that's why he should be trained with his mother. That makes no sense. So, of course, the attention is nerve-wracking, but I love it. I love the fact that all eyes are on me. And, I mean, it's not just a gimmick. I'm actually good. So when they see me in the ring, it's even better.
Do you have you ever had anybody chuckle at you when you're, you know, maybe at weigh-in or something in the amateurs or even in the pros? Have you ever had your opponent team chuckle at you guys like, come on, man, are you serious? Have you ever had that happen to you?
Oh, all the time. In the amateurs, when I went to nationals, people used to be like, mama's boy, this kid, is he serious? And he used to laugh at me all the time, but I feel like I've gotten known in the amateurs, so they stopped doing that, they started respecting it, and in the pros it happens. I mean, I fought in South Carolina maybe a year ago, and in the crowd, one of my family members were recording the fight. In the crowd, you can hear somebody yell, oh, you can't let him beat you. He's trained by his mom. Come on, you can't let him beat you. But I knocked that kid out, though, so it happens. But everyone's going to learn to respect and to love it.
Hey, when you knocked him out, did you stand over him and said, mama said knock you out?
No, I should have, though.
Dennis, this is Gabe Montoya. I'm with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Welcome to the show, man. You're fighting Martez. My pleasure. You're having Martez Logan on. That's your next opponent. Now, Martez, you know, most people, he's almost kind of like Emmanuel Augustus, and he's kind of a road warrior, trial horse guy, but he's a lot more dangerous than his record would suggest. Are you familiar with him as a fighter? Have you seen tape of him? Break him down a little bit for us.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't seen any tape with him. I mean, I've heard things about him, people that are in my camp. I've seen tapes on him and told me that he's a tough guy. He fights anybody. He usually goes the distance. I mean, he has a losing record, but I've heard that I shouldn't be sleeping on him. But I don't sleep on anyone anyway. So, I mean, we're training. I'm training for a world championship fight. I'm training for a 12-round IBF title fight right now. So it doesn't matter what he steps in the ring with. I'm definitely going to be ready. So, I mean, I heard he's a very game fight, but I'm ready. So let's get it on.
What do you feel, at this point, you're heading into your 10th fight, and you're obviously a very celebrated amateur fighter, you're a blue-chip prospect, as they say. Do you feel now more that you're definitely a pro fighter, that you've kind of shaken off all the amateur problems and that you're really developing yourself into a man, a fighter?
Yes, definitely. I feel like every time I step in the ring as a pro fighter, I'm getting better and better and more used to the no headgear and picking your punches and everything like that. But what we're trying to do is I'm trying to bring some of my amateur style into the pros, because a lot of pros like to slow down, throw a little bit of punches, take their time and everything like that. And, I mean, that works, but I want to come in with a lot of energy. And in the amateurs, you have 3 rounds, 3 minutes. You got to let your hands go nonstop if you want to win the fight. And I just want to go into the pros with that same attitude. I want to let my hands go, bring a lot of entertainment to the fight, outwork my opponent in every aspect. So we're trying to keep a balance of both. So I don't want to lose all the things I've learned in the amateurs. I just want to add the stuff that I'm learning as far as the pros go.
Nice. Now, do you expect this guy Martez Logan? I mean, he's fought a who's who of boxing. You know, he's actually fought both Peterson brothers. Ronald Hearns was his last fight. James De La Rosa. All kinds of. For you to show, you know, kind of a measuring stick of where you're at, do you feel you need to stop it, or is it more important to just get the experience, get the rounds?
I mean, I want to go in and get the experience. I would love to get the knockout. I mean, that's what everybody wants to go in the ring and get. Of course, the knockout looks great on your record. But I'm just going in to fight and fighting my fight. If the knockout comes, it comes. If it doesn't, I'm going to win the fight. I'm trying to win every round. And that's pretty much it. Either way, I'm walking out with experience. If I walk out with a knockout in the first 20 seconds, I'm going to experience the knockout. And if I walk out with a 6-round or 8-round decision, then I'll just walk out with the decision. But I'm definitely walking out a winner.
Dennis, in terms of getting prepared and having your mother on your corner, how difficult is it for you and your mother to get the proper sparring to be prepared?
It's not difficult at all. I mean, New Jersey has a lot of talented fighters, not necessarily where we live because we live in the suburbs. So I have to travel a little bit to up north to, like, Newark, Elizabeth, and stuff like that. And I go to Brooklyn and train. I'm sparring. So we travel all over and get sparring. So the sparring is not a problem at all.
Is there, in terms of relationships with your mom and stuff, you know, is there a difference when – is there an agreement, in other words, when you step into the ring – between mom and mom and son relationship from stepping out of the ring, are you guys completely different, or is it always the same type of relationship?
I mean, I think for the most part it's the same type of relationship. She's a trainer 24/7, which actually kind of makes it a little difficult to live with her because she's always watching what I'm eating 24/7. She's always watching me with my girlfriend, like, oh, she can't be here because, you know, you got a fight coming up, and so I think she's always a trainer, but I've learned to love it, and we get along great, so I enjoy it. I mean, it keeps me more focused knowing that I live with my trainer, and she's tough, so it makes me better.
Now, you've been on Broadway Boxing, which is Lou DiBella. You guys gotten great exposure off of there. Are you guys hoping to maybe make the bill of a Showtime or possibly a headline on an ESPN, you know, to try to break through?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we want as much exposure as possible for every fight we get. So we're always looking for a Showtime card, a Friday night fights card, anything. We just want to be out there. We want the world to get to know us and become a household name. So, but we're working towards it. We don't have a promoter right now. We're just working by ourselves, and we're getting it done like this. So as soon as we
sign,
what's
the reason? What's the reason not to have a promoter? I mean, why not have a promoter at the moment?
We're working towards getting a promoter right now too, but we just wanted to make sure that everyone knew who we were before we signed. I don't want to sign the contract with a promoter and he doesn't know who I am and what I can do and stuff like that. So we wanted to showcase our skills and then let the promoters see what we're bringing to the table before we start taking deals, because I want them to know my worth, and I think I'm worth a lot.
Absolutely, brother. Well, Mama's boy Dennis Duglin is with us on right now, Leaving the Ring. Hey, brother, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep racking in the wins, brother, and we'll keep a very close eye and hopefully get you back on again on the Prospect Watch that we have here on Leaving the Ring. And, and next time, hopefully we can get your mom on a little bit so we can talk to her a little bit about your guys' career.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for having me, and just guys can get in contact with me on Twitter at the Mama's Boy, and just keep in touch with me. I'm definitely gonna be world champion one day, so I love to come back on.
Absolutely,
and
brother.
To come back on.
Great, man. You take it easy.
All right, thanks.
Well, there you go, Mama's Boy, middleweight prospect, contender, whatever you want to call them, is. On their way. You know, I mean, I had a great time. I got a little sidetracked over here and stuff. I was reading what Gabriel was telling me and stuff, man. But hey, like always, man, have a great time on Leaving in the Ring. It's always a pleasure. It's a privilege, you know, that, you know, people are letting me speak to the fighters. People are letting me get on here and meeting everybody that, you know, that are in the business, you know, fighters and stuff. Because that's one thing, man. You got to bow down to these fighters that are putting their lives on the line for entertainment for eyes like ours, you know, because that's exactly what they are, man, is that they're warriors, and we always got to take our hats off to these particular warriors, you know. And,
that's the thing, man, is, you know, you always hear those UFC guys or MMA fans telling us that the sport is dying. And for us, you know, it's about being part of the solution rather than part of the problem. And, you know, if the pay-per-view is not to your liking, don't buy it. But at the same time, pay back the sport by supporting guys like this, guys that are young and up and coming, giving them the coverage, giving them your attention when they're being covered, reading about them or interacting with them, like he said on Twitter. You know, Charles Huerta is on Twitter now. He's also just got a Facebook. And all these guys, Espinoza Boxing, you can find them all out there and interact with them and give them your support. You know, at the same time, you got to call the sport on their fouls. And when you think a pay-per-view is not good, then there are other ways to see it, or don't watch it at all. You know, and let supporters know, hey, you know what? I'm not buying this. You know, I want something better from this sport. But again, pay your sport back. pay your respects to the prospects and the contenders and all the people that do good things in the sport.
Exactly. You know, there's not always bad in boxing. There is real good stuff that happened in boxing, and this is one of them. Prospect Watch is, you know, one of these shows that a lot of fight fans wrote to us on leaveitintheringgmail.com and said, hey, man, we love the first segment. We need another one. And if you keep writing us and, you know, and demanding stuff like this, we're definitely going to provide it. You got to thank all the PRs that were involved in making, creating the show, helping us create the show and making it as successful as much as it was, even though we had some technical problems and stuff. But, Mama's boy Douglas Duglin is in good company because he's going to be in company with Donnell Livingston and Brandon Gonzalez. So, you know what? The crops of the crops in this weight and all the weight class in boxing are definitely going to be worth picking in about another 5 years or so. Once again, man, this is your host, Dave Duenas, with Gabriel Montoya. Ernesto Gabillon wasn't on, man, because it was Sunday. He had some things he had to take care of, but that's okay. We'll have him on Thursday, you know, and hopefully again on Prospect Watch. You know, shout out to everybody that's involved, from Stand and Fight to Boricua to Boxing Scene. To all the la gente in boxing, the boxing heads, the people that make this sport one of the greatest sports in the world. If it's not boxing, we don't care. This is Leaving the Ring, man. You guys have a good Sunday.
Happy Sunday, folks. And yeah, Ernie's Catholic, so I guess he couldn't be here. But, you know, we'll have him on next Thursday. It'll be a great show. I'm looking really forward to it, man. Dave, great job today, as always.
Yeah, man. Well, you can consider us as Jehovah's Witnesses because we're always knocking your door to tell you to watch boxing.
Exactly right.
All right, guys. You guys take it easy. Good night.
Good night.